Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's good to be back in the normal swing of things again. We started with Moran Monday, and what a Moran Monday it was. We were up to our armpits in Morans. Merciful heaven. We truly were. And I think this evening's program will prove to be equally scintillating. Going to be hard not to, because a number of things have sort of converged here, just little pieces disparately picked from various sources as we go forward for the evening, and they all sort of, in one of those beautiful mind kind of ways, pulled together in my own twisted noggin. To form some sort of a cohesive whole. The real question is, which one do you start with? And, well, okay, let's try this. I closed the show last night, and I noticed that someone, by the way, a big shout out, hey, to a new friend of the program. I had a nice chat. I want to make sure I do this because I don't want to forget. Had a nice chat after the show last night with a new listener, Hernan from Argentina. It was a real pleasure to make his acquaintance. He's the one who does Mike Malloy's. He's a volunteer who does Mike Malloy's YouTube channel, and popped by just to see what all the fuss was about and. I've got to make his acquaintance, and it's always nice to make a new friend. So big shout-out to Hernan. And another reminder, I'm trying to get all this in order because, just like I said, these various and disparate elements that I ran into as we begin the program, which sort of precluded my ability to pull together a coherent show post for today. Today is sort of a cook's tour, if you will. Because I couldn't make it be, and things were breaking and popping and happening, even as almost as I was pressing the button to start the show. So my apologies to our news ninja Susan for not getting a copy out to her, because the only thing I could have done was that sort of Jack Nicholson Shining thing about, you know, all work and no play makes Bob a dull boy, over and over and over again. But attending to business, go over right quick, especially if you're listening live, even if you're not. If you're listening to a podcast or if you are listening to the rerun stream, do what I'm doing now. You heard the clacking of the keys. Go over to WhiteRoseSociety.org. You will see a fundraising thermometer there. And you will see that as a result of our little discussion last night about the rather dire need for funding at White Rose Society, you'll see the little thermometer bulb is up to about $259, and Ben is augmenting that as he can, as it happens, sort of real-time-ishly, if you will. And he's trying to raise $1,000. please continue to help out in that effort if you can. We're in the usual pickle, the usual bind here at the Horn. But frankly, I can sit here and scream into this microphone until hell freezes over. But if there's no White Rose Society, there's no Horn Stream, there's no Horn website, there's no Horn. So have a look over there and do what you can as you can, and I'll appreciate it. Thank you. I should probably also tell you that after what were apparently monsoon-like rains, as of probably a week from today, we will be finished with the interminable septic system project. It didn't come in at any $5,000 like I was told it would, but we're going to finish the damn thing. It's going to be closer to $7,000, and that's always interesting when things like that happen, but we're going to get there. And you know what we're going to do? I was thinking of taking the whole fam damily out to somewhere that there was a Port-a-John in a parking lot and having us all standing there with a big thumbs up because, you know, we're not going to have to move one of those onto the property of the mansion here. I don't know, but there will be a great big thank you photo on the website when that thing is done. Trust me. And then we start sweating the coming of winter and things like snow on the roof and hoping that the damn thing doesn't just... Hey, look, it's life! It's the life of the formerly middle class, the getting accustomed to being lower class, the forgotten class, depending on what you want to call it. You heard Sandra refer to Paul Krugman's column from August the 1st. I think it bears sharing. It was headlined, Defining Prosperity Down. And Krugman wrote, and you know what, Sandra was right, and I wanted you to see why she was correct. She said, haven't we been talking about this on the Horn for a year? Yeah, we have. Krugman writes, I'm starting to have a sick feeling about prospects for American workers, but not or not entirely for the reasons you might think. Yes, growth is slowing, and the odds are that unemployment will rise, not fall, in the months ahead. That's bad. But what's worse, and here's the gravamen of the issue, what's worse is the growing evidence that our governing elite just doesn't care. That a once unthinkable level of economic distress is in the process of becoming the new normal. And I worry that those in power, rather than taking responsibility for job creation, will soon declare that high unemployment is structural. God, you kind of have to open a button and let some chest hair poke out. Guys, not ladies. The chest hair poke out and clench your teeth and sort of finger the gold necklace around your neck. Well, you understand that high unemployment like this is structural. You can talk with teeth clenched. It's structural. And make some of those Ivy League noises. Oh, yeah. It's structural. A permanent part of the economic landscape, and that by condemning large numbers of Americans to long-term joblessness, they'll turn that excuse into dismal reality. Not long ago, anyone predicting that 1 in 6 American workers would soon be unemployed or underemployed, and that the average unemployed worker would have been jobless for 35 weeks, would have been dismissed as outlandishly pessimistic, in part because if anything like that happened, policymakers would surely be pulling out all the stops on behalf of job creation. Oh, it's hard to read that sentence and not chuckle a little bit. But now it has happened, and what do we see? First, we see Congress sitting on its hands with Repiglicans. I mean, he says Republicans, but, you know, come on. With Repiglicans and conservative Democrats. You know, like Joe Manchin will be when he gets to the Senate. Remind me to talk to you a little bit about Ken Heckler's campaign. First, we see Congress sitting on its hands with Repiglicans and conservative Democrats, you know, Dinos, Democrats in name only, refusing to spend anything to create jobs and unwilling even to mitigate the suffering of the jobless. Do you realize that Ben Nelson, that sick freak from Nebraska with the dead weasel on his head, where his hair ought to be, do you realize that Ben Nelson has openly announced that he will, in fact, vote against Elena Kagan's nomination to the Supreme Court? That came out 3 days ago. Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan saw the first crack Friday in a so far solid base of Democratic support for her virtually certain confirmation next week when centrist Senator Ben Nelson said he would vote no. The Nebraska Democrat said he'd heard concerns from his constituents about President Barack Obama's nominee and that her lack of a judicial record made it impossible to dismiss them. The Senate is expected to vote next week on Kagan's nomination. This guy, see, Senate Democrats in name only, like Ben Nelson, they don't give a rat's rear end about you, about me. They are wholly owned subsidiaries of whatever particular industry chose to bought them. They are, yes, I said bought them. They are creatures. They are not real elected representatives of the people. They are representatives of corporate America. So, Ben Nelson has said, I'm going to vote against her. Now, he has promised that since he's a member of the Gang of 14, that he will support cloture so that she can at least get an up or down vote. But he's going to be true to the principles of real Nebraskans. And the weasel on his head. And he's going to vote against that communist. That communist woman that we don't know enough about her communisting about. He's going to vote out against her. So that's, you know, that's what the Democrats in name only are paying attention to. Not the real suffering of the people of the United States. I go back to Paul Krugman. We're told that we can't afford to help the unemployed, that we must get budget deficits down immediately, or the bond vigilantes will send U.S. borrowing costs sky high. Some of us have tried to point out that those bond vigilantes are, as far as anyone can tell, figments of the deficit hawk's imagination. Far from fleeing U.S. debt, investors have been buying it eagerly, driving interest rates to historic lows. But the fearmongers are unmoved. Fighting deficits, they insist, must take priority over everything else. Everything else, that is, except tax cuts for the rich, which must be extended no matter how much red ink they create. The point is that a large part of Congress, large enough to block any action on jobs, cares a lot about taxes on the richest 1% of the population, but very little about the plight of Americans who can't find work. The column goes on at length in that regard. You can read it all over at the New York Times. So then we have to run over and get an idea of what that looks like, what that failure looks like, that failure to act. And we find an article, again, from the New York Times, dated yesterday, Dateline Brattleboro, Vermont. Facing eviction from her Tennessee apartment after several months of unpaid rent, Alexandra Jaron packed up whatever she could fit into her two-door coupe recently and drove out of town. Ms. Jaron, age 49, wound up at a motel here in Brattleboro, putting down $260 she had managed to scrape together from friends and from selling her living room set, enough for a week-long stay. It was essentially all the money she had left after her unemployment benefits expired in March. Now she's facing a previously unimaginable situation for a woman who, not that long ago, had a corporate job near New York City and was enrolled in a graduate business school whose sticker is still emblazoned on her back windshield. Barring a miracle, I'm going to be in my car, she said. Ms. Jaron is part of a hard-luck group of jobless Americans whose members have taken to calling themselves 99ers. Which is different from 13thers, 14thers, birthers, deathers, 10thers, and other right-wing booger eaters. No, 99ers are a very, very real group. They are that group of Americans who have exhausted the maximum 99 weeks of unemployment insurance benefits that they can claim. See, they got screwed. As the article notes, for them, the resolution recently of the lengthy Senate impasse over extending jobless benefits was no balm. The measure renewed two federal programs that extended jobless benefits in this recession beyond the traditional 26 weeks to anywhere from 60 to 99 weeks, depending on the state's unemployment rate. But many jobless have now exceeded those limits. They are adjusting to a new harsh reality with no income. They're still on the books, but they're off the concerns. How many of these 99ers are there? In a population of roughly 300 million, there are 1.4 million people who have been out of work for 99 weeks or more. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. As the article notes, without the checks, many, like Ms. Jaron, who lost her job as director of client services at a small technology company in March 2008, are beginning to tumble over the economic cliff. The last vestiges of their former working class or middle class lives are gone. It is inescapable now that they are indigent. Ms. Jaron said she wept as she drove away from her old life last month, wondering if she would ever be able to reclaim it. You know, she sold her couch! And here's a hint. Couches don't have a hell of a lot of resale value. At one point, I thought, you know, what if I turned the wheel in my car and just wrecked my car, she said. The article observes, nevertheless, the political appetite to help people like Ms. Jaron appears limited. Over the last few months, 99ers have tried to organize to press Congress to provide an additional tier of unemployment insurance, but the political potency of fears about the skyrocketing deficit, Godzilla, has drowned them out. The notion that unemployment benefits discourage recipients from finding work has also crept into Republican arguments against extensions. Well, if you just pay them to lay on their lazy asses, that's all they're going to do. They're going to lay on their lazy asses. They ain't going to get out there. There's plenty of work out there in America if people wouldn't bend over and pick lettuce. That's them jobs them Mexicans is taking from us. We need to send patriotic Americans out into American vegetable farms to pick lettuce and tomatoes. Because that's American work now. And we can rebuild the lower class on vegetable picking. And so, with the limited exception of folks like Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, who's working on a bill to help the 99ers, ain't much out there. Ain't much out there. And see, we won't have too many stories about what happens to Ms. Stettners out there. They won't be there. I had an email last night that, for reasons of my own, I will leave as anonymous. Based on the mention of the Krugman piece, the writer said, having looked at it after we mentioned it last night, quite the read, dare I say it? Sure, Krugman's probably right. Luckily, I own a pistol and have the will to stop my suffering once it comes. Or should I say once my resource goes? No matter, my leaving won't ruffle Wall Street or those that study the demographic spending the big bucks. I will simply have taken control of my happiness. With the media steamroller the right has and the connection they have to the lizard brain, they shall prevail. Having won, they will cut off my Social Security income. I will live long enough to see it. Not kidding. Having about a year of personal money after that, I'll walk out back and put one in my temple. Washington, D.C. will not care. The local TV station will not care. No one that can affect policy will care. I don't buy Air Jordans, watch American Chef Courtroom, or buy bass boats. I do not now, nor shall I then, matter to the process of this country. the things that illuminate the future for me is the ability of Fox News to snow older voters. Remember the good old days of the third rail phenomenon? They gone. Fox has had just enough impact to do a What's Wrong with Kansas on 70-year-olds. Think about it. We've laughed about the old folks carrying signs, keep government hands off my Social Security. Just like the telemarketers that could con an old guy into investing, Fox has conned some of that elder block into being ready to vote against their own self-interest. That, and they're convinced they've convinced people under 35 you'll never see the Social Security money. So the perfect yin and yang will be unleashed. If there is another 1994-type congressional election, game over. All that delay permanent majority shite will sprout like weeds in spring. Redistricting the works. They win one like that, and delay will be on the telly more than whatever hood ornament they've elected president. Seriously. The Republican neocon cabal wins any sort of majority. It is permanent. So let it be written. So let it be done. Hard to refute that. Then this came in earlier today. I have to... It was from our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, at headonradionetwork.com. And he proposed it as a topic for tomorrow's Wacko Wednesday. He said, prayer meeting Wednesday. And I will save the story. We won't go into it. But as usual, Reverbo's comments have a way of being more trenchant and more broadly applicable than that to which others, it's broad-based stuff. There we go. Quit trying to be so slick, Bob. Referring to the story that we'll get to tomorrow, he said, this is so sick and so insidious, and the thing is, and here's where the broad-brushed applicability comes in, the thing is, most Americans are so gullible and idealistic that they will not only swallow just about any load of American dream bullshit, they basically refuse to believe this stuff goes on. You have to wonder after a while if almost all those in power are basically a bunch of lying Nazis in waiting. America has been living with this cognitive dissonance legend of such immense proportions. Think Manifest Destiny. You know, steamroll the Indians. And now they're so happy and content in their peaceful little poverty-stricken alcohol-laced existence, all the way to this latest immoral majority aggression against anyone who is different. You know, burning down playgrounds because they're Muslim slicky slides. And who doesn't embrace the spiritual strength that imbues the true Christian soul from killing people and killing the earth, and on and on. And now this sentence has deteriorated into slop. Poor Reverbo, he's constantly honing his craft, even as he's emptying his brain. Onward, Christian soldiers! It's still an effing crusade! As I recall, those commies were godless heathens, too. Except they were white, so that was a bit of a problem. Bit of a problem. And then, you see what I mean about the day sort of dovetailing for me and the program sort of writing itself? So then I got today's Your RDA of Irony from the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman. Named in a post called The Libel Arts. If you're not signed up for your RDA of Irony, why aren't you? Go to FinnermanWorks.com and get signed up. That's FinnermanWorks, F-I-N-E-R-M-A-N, Works.com. FinnermanWorks.com. Because what will hit your mailbox on an almost daily basis will be either educational, informational, humorational, or some combination of the three. And in this case, what Eugene had written, boom, just sort of fell into the whole existential thing that I've got on me like a spacesuit right now. The libel arts. The truth can always be improved. We see it all the time in ads for films. For example, let's say the movie reviewer writes, quote, "Once again, that puerile bore Rob Schneider attempts to be funny." The ads for the movie will quote this from the review. Funny. That may be slightly out of context, but the quote is technically correct. Now, the same creative technique is being applied to political ads. Your newspaper may have written, quote, "In his proposal to outlaw any sexual position he can't spell, State Senator Wendell Gopper reveals himself an execrable buffoon." The ads for Wendell Gopper will then quote the newspaper praising Gopper as able and buff. There are other ways to create such quotes, says Eugene. Gopper's campaign could put an ad in the singles section saying, "I am looking for the type of person who thinks that Wendell Gopper is a brilliant statesman and God's gift to our district." Since it's in the newspaper, Gopper's TV ads have every right to quote it. "Wendell Gopper is a brilliant statesman and God's gift to our district. So says the morning battle cry of freedom and moral volcano." So what if it wasn't exactly on the editorial page? Who's counting? Of course, the same creativity could be applied to negative ads. The Gopper staff, remembering to use blank stationery, could submit this letter to the newspaper. Quote, "It is long overdue that candidate Drake Preenwell deny that he is a necrophile." Unquote. If the letter is published, then it is technically a quote, and the Gopper TV ads will also publicize the line as if it were a Pulitzer Prize-winning pronouncement. "On the pages of the Morning Glory Battle Cry of Freedom and Moral Volcano, it was plainly stated that candidate Drake Preenwell needs to deny he is a necrophile." Oh, but there's one little rub. What if the letter doesn't get published? Well, there's a way around that. TV ads for Wendell Gopper will show an unflattering picture of Drake Preenwell. The ad's voiceover begins and the following words appear on the screen. "Your newspaper says, a drunken degenerate, a ludicrous public spectacle, a disgrace to his family, dying of syphilis." And every quote would be technically true. Of course, the quotes were from an article on Toulouse-Lautrec, but that's a trivial detail. I love those little humorous moments from Eugene that they have a way of turning out to be a lot more true than humorous. But then again, maybe that's the nature of humor as opposed to comedy. And so we then slide over into a couple of other areas. Bear with me. This may take a few minutes. And I got to figure out which one to go after. Okay. Well, not go after, but to point out. Heather over at Crooks and Liars has a post today that features an exchange with between Rick Sanchez and a couple of little, well, you know, CNN's Ed Henry creature and some talking idiot. Well, let's just let it speak for itself.
All right, you have something going on with the White House.
Something else going on with the White House, and Ed Henry is kind of going to trend with us.
Put a sneak in here again, is
that
right?
Hey, friend.
How are you?
So this whole story, it is all over the Internet today. I woke up, and you, big-time White House correspondent,
sure,
you get to sit in the White House briefing room.
Fox.
Oh,
right?
This is the Fox story.
Fox News. AP.
Yeah.
And so Helen Thomas, she's no longer sitting in that front row center seat, the highly coveted seat. She's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the big-time president of this board.
Future president, but I'm on the board, yeah.
Right. So you're on this board, and you have to determine who gets the front row center seat, and then, so who got it?
Fox, Bloomberg, and National Public Radio were vying for it, all made strong cases. In the end, Fox unanimously moved up to the front row, but did not get the seat Helen Thomas was in. We voted unanimously to move the Associated Press over to where Helen Thomas was, because what a lot of people were missing in this whole fight.
Before crack Washington, Johnny on the spot, press corps, White House observer, correspondent, CNN, Ed Henry, explains what we're missing, could I simply point out that this is the worst form of kabuki, that this is the most sickening form of stylized opera? Really? Really, we're down. We are culturally down to discussing, because I was guilty of it. We talked about it last night. We sorted it out. I was guilty of talking about it. But we're actually talking about who gets to sit in what chair, in which room, in the White House. What? Isn't that just a tad, I don't know, shallow? And take this from me, a guy who knows from shallow. I got all kinds of shallow going for me. You know what I did last night? I remembered that at 10 o'clock, and it's a new season, and I ran in and turned on the Travel Channel and watched a glorious hour of Anthony Bourdain. I'm shallow. But you know what? I got more out of that, and it was a documentary, sort of, too, that went back 11 years. I got more out of that than I can get out of any given hour of CNN in terms of just making the wheels turn inside my brain. That's what I did. So I know from shallow, but this is shallow. But, you know, never fear. Johnny on the spot, CNN, Washington, White House correspondent Ed Henry is going to explain to the great unwashed what we don't understand about playing musical chairs in the White House press room.
And it is a fight, which is fascinating for those of us who don't understand the inner workings.
Sure, and then we can walk through.
Well, but I understand the Associated Press. I even understand Bloomberg. But don't you have to be a news organization to get that seat? Yeah.
Oh, are you saying Fox is not a news organization?
Yeah. No, I'm just wondering.
Well, was there not a whole Facebook page telling you not to allow Fox?
There was. There were a lot of pressure campaigns on the Internet who were not happy and didn't understand why someone at CNN would be voting for Fox. Bottom line is that I was wearing my board hat, not my CNN hat.
Sure.
I have the TV.
He was clearly not wearing his journalist hat. But we'll get to that.
You see it on the board. We look out for all five of the major U.S. networks, including Fox. And in fact, we pool our resources with Fox when we travel around the world. And their White House reporters, regardless.
Sometimes we provide the bacon-wrapped scallops that are roasted in the oven, and sometimes they provide the little Viennese cocktail weenies in the grape juice gravy. It's how it works in the great professional for-profit journalism world.
This is what Rick may think about some of their other hosts. I watch the program, and I know who he likes.
Their Dayside stuff is solid.
Major Garrett, Mike Emanuel, Wendell Goller are all solid reporters.
It's some of the other shows in the prime time.
Fox
got a front row seat, and former AP seat. AP moved over where Helen Thomas was, because Helen Thomas is not really the Helen Thomas seat.
Mm-hmm.
People mix that up as well. She had that because she was a senior wire reporter at UPI years and years ago.
That's true.
Kept it. And the center seat was reserved for the person who started the news conference, the first question of the president, and thank you, Mr. President, at the end. So now the AP will have those honors. And Fox moves up to the front. A lot of controversy.
Well, I feel better about that because, you know, AP's a really, really, wait a minute, they're really, really pissy about their content. That's what AP is. Never mind.
About it, but, you know, there was all this jockeying.
I think that's fascinating.
It is. It's fascinating. I'm just fascinated. I'm transfixed. No, not really. So, with reference to that clip, Heather had a posting over at Crooks and Liars, and she wrote the following. Rick Sanchez states the truth on CNN just about how bad Cluster Fox is, and that's cute too, but I still prefer Radio Rwanda, with getting a move up to the front row in the briefing room for the White House press corps. They didn't get Helen Thomas's seat, the AP did, but they still got a seat in the front row, much to the horror of his cohorts, Ed Henry, who voted to allow Fox to move up, and Brooke Baldwin, that's who that is. That's fascinating. Rick Sanchez does something I'll bet he's backpedaling on later. He tells the truth that Fox is not a news organization. I read, and Heather then says, I read something a while back where Fox won a lawsuit, and if memory serves, it was from Canada. And they won it because they said they were an entertainment network and not news. I keep wondering how they, and this is the central part of where I'm going. Says Heather, I keep wondering how they can keep the word news as part of their marketing after that haven't happened, but haven't had the time to look into it. Maybe some of our readers here can fill me in if they followed it. Well, I was happy to do the fill-in work. Because it's something that we have talked about on this program, and I think it was actually rather profound. And I've repeated it a couple of times, and it looks like it's time for me to repeat it again. Fox News, everybody, pen, paper, write this down. Spread it around a little bit. Maybe people, you know, if you, Sandra was right last night. We've been saying for a year what Paul Krugman just got around to saying in really, really nice words yesterday. If you listen to the horn, you are consistently ahead of the curve, both in news and trends in culture and society. You just will be. You can't help but be. And so, let me just drive this home again. Let me just check in the chat room real quick. Has anybody typed this out yet? What am I about to say? What am I about to say? Somebody type it in there. What am I about to say about Fox News? Waiting. Okay, well, it'll happen in a minute. What I'm about to say about Fox News is as follows. Fox News is not a description of product. Fox News is a brand name. You remember that now famous the quip clip from the reality show that Jessica Simpson and I forget who, what boy toy she was married to at the time, but when she looked at the can of tuna fish and she said, "Is it a chicken of the sea? Is it chicken or is it tuna?" And all of America, "Oh, look at the dumb blonde. She don't know whether tuna's chicken or chicken's tuna. Dang, that's just funny." Fox News is not a product description any more than chicken of the sea describes what's in that can. There's no chicken! Any more than Lucky Charms has Lucky Charms in it. It's the, what did Watterson call them in Calvin and Hobbes? Super sugar, super frosted chocolate coated sugar bombs, I think was the brand name cereal that Calvin loved. These are brand names. That's why the little TM is outside of it. And see, there's a difference. CNN, for instance, is a brand name. But the real meaning of CNN is Cable News Network. Not Chicken Noodle News. Not Corporate News Network. It's Cable News Network. And that states a purpose, not a branding. CNN is the branding. That's why they have a logo for it. That's why Fox News, all jammed up together with the little Fox thing in the background that's vaguely reminiscent of an American flag, that's why it is a brand. There is no news in Fox News. It's a brand name. Can I make this any clearer? Is there any misunderstanding about this? Fox News exists to radicalize and whoop up the emotions, not the intellect, the emotions of its viewership. This is elemental to understanding what they're doing. This is a condition precedent to comprehending what is happening on Fox News and why Glenn Beck is there. This is not a... So that's the answer to Heather's query. And that's why we don't call them Fox News anymore. We're going for a little bit of accuracy here when inaccuracy seems to be the watchword of the day. But that's how it is at the horn. We always go away from trend. There is a scene in Shakespeare's Henry V where Henry tells his betrothed, the French princess, "We must be makers of fashion and not followers of it." And to an extent, that's an operating philosophy for the horn. I don't know what, I honest to God do not know what anybody else in talk radio, even on the liberal side, talked about today. I can only move according to what my little feelers and the tingling nerve endings tell me matters. And sometimes I hit and sometimes I miss. But I will not be a follower of a fashion. For as long as we're out here doing what we're doing the way we're doing it, by God, I will be a maker of it. And you will be a maker of it. And you will bring to the table what matters. And we will discuss it. Let us be makers of fashion and not followers of it. And so consequently, because we are makers of fashion and not followers of it, we don't talk about Fox News anymore, because it's a brand name. It's like talking, we can say breakfast cereal instead of having to say Super Frosted Sugar Pops. We can just say breakfast cereal. And that's why instead of referring to we just call it Radio Rwanda. As Sandra suggested, Radio Rwanda. It's that easy. Because all broadcast enterprises that seek to radicalize their audiences, that seek to emotionalize as opposed to informing, that seek the frenzy, that seek frenzy instead of reason, that seek the lizard brain instead of the Homo sapiens part of the brain. Those aren't news organizations. Every last one of them are operating on the same principle that flowed through the microphone and out of the tower in the 90s in Rwanda, Radio Rwanda, and for which the operators were tried as the war criminals they goddamned well were. See how it works? But we're not done. We're not done. My good friend, Jeff Biggers, posted something today. And he, it was a beautiful piece. It was genuinely inspiring. Of course, that is the nature of that's the nature of Jeff's writing. Over at Common Dreams it was published, and our good friend Benedict at Large from the chat room reminded me of it. CommonDreams.org, under Jeff Biggers' signature. SOS, day 12,065 of mountaintop removal disaster. Appalachia is rising. Again, I encourage you to go and read this. Here, let me do this real quick. And copy. And into. And there it is in the chat room. Go and have a look. If you look on my Facebook page, you should see where this is posted. Summertime. The living is easy in the coal fields, except from dusk to dawn, when untold millions of pounds of explosives are detonated across 24 states in the nation, raining down silica and coal dust, contaminating wells and watersheds, sending boulders the size of bowling balls into the homes of American citizens. Dear media, it's day 12,065 of the mountaintop removal mining disaster. Day 12,065. See, we were very good at counting days during the BP disaster. Oh, it's day 41. Oh, it's day 63. Here in Appalachia and around the country, this is day 12,065 because today has a particular meaning for those of us who have to live near some form, and I don't mean merely only Appalachia, I mean all over the country. 24 states, as Jeff Biggers noted. Today is an anniversary, you see. It was August the 3rd, as Jeff notes, August the 3rd, 1977. A good man, a liberal Democrat president, who had actually campaigned openly on his desire to end all forms of strip mining, got into office, Jimmy Carter, got into office, and then people like my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal of the West Virginia's 3rd District, had his way with him. And they wrote, instead of ending strip mining, which was the right, the moral, the decent, the honorable thing to do, instead of ending strip mining, they said, well, that means jobs. Look here, Jimmy, we got us a recession going on, and it's all your fault. Even though the inflation was worse under Nixon and Ford, we're going to pin it on you. No, we need jobs. We need jobs, jobs, damn it, jobs, jobs. And what we need jobs in is in strip mining, because that'll actually make us have to provide less jobs and more machinery. That means the coal gets more profitable, sugar. And so on this day, August the 3rd, 1977. Yeah, 33 years ago. Jimmy Carter signed into law a pathetic piece of legislative filth called the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act. Even as he signed it, Jimmy Carter complained, as Jeff Biggers notes, that SMACRA, as it's called. Isn't it interesting that we would concoct an acronym for a strip mining bill that affects my home area and the home areas of folks like Jeff Biggers and folks in Montana and Wyoming and the Black Mesa of Arizona and probably soon in existence, Alaska even, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, longwall mining in Pennsylvania. Isn't it interesting that the acronym we would affix to that would begin with the word smack? In point of fact, isn't this filthiest of all fossil fuels, isn't this America's smack? Isn't this our horse? Isn't this our junk? Our H? Man, America doesn't have an H problem. America has a C problem, and that C stands for coal. We have a Smack Act, and today is its 33rd anniversary. Day 12,065 of mountaintop removal, and Jimmy Carter complained when he signed the bill that it still allows the mining companies to cut the tops off of Appalachian mountains to reach entire seams of coal. That's a quote, baby. Jeff writes, the crime of mountaintop removal, as Al Gore once said, was federally sanctioned. Jeff also did a little bit of research. Guess what? Jimmy Carter's farm in Plains, Georgia, is powered in part via Georgia Power Company, part of the Southern Company, powered in part by the communities destroyed and devastated, by lives ended, health ruined, organs and blood poisoned in Appalachia, because of all the toxins released by mountaintop removal. This is, as I said, a brilliant post, another brilliant post by Jeff Biggers. He has quotes in there from Bo Webb. He talks about Appalachia rising, which you and I need to talk about at great length, if it is at all humanly possible for you to be in Washington, D.C. from September the 25th to the 27th of this year, a little over a month and a half away. If you can be there, be there. Because Appalachia rising is a call to the entire nation to rise and demand an end of mountaintop removal, because there is not a single issue in this country, not one, you name one, you try, that is not impacted by the horror of Appalachia's agony. Not one. Mama? Mama? Out there in one of the plain states, maybe you're in Iowa, Maybe you're in the Dakotas. Maybe you're in Kansas. Maybe you're in Oklahoma, Mama. And you don't understand why it is that there's never been a bit of asthma in your entire family, Mama. You don't understand why there's never been a bit of asthma in your entire family, but your little boy can't breathe, Mama. I can tell you why. Because mountaintop removal is taking place in Appalachia, and it's being burned under your nose, and more importantly, right into your little son's lungs where you sit. Daddy, when you come home from a hard day at work, and it's one of those every 6 weeks kind of things, and you keep getting your little girl's grade card, and she's just not learning right, and you know how smart, how brilliant, how utterly shot, just compellingly intelligent that beautiful woman you married is, and you know that you're no dummy, but your precious little girl, she's having a hard time learning, and you don't know why. And you go to the doctor and the psychologist and the psychiatrist, and nobody knows why, but they got some pills. Daddy, I can tell you. I can tell you, Daddy. It's because on that precious night, in the tender embrace of your wife, when you conceived your darling daughter, on that night, there was already enough mercury from coal-fired power plants that had found its way into your wife's system, into her being, so that your baby girl would be born with at least a 10-point IQ deficit, Daddy. Daddy, I know, but they won't tell you. But I will, because this is my job. I'm not Rush Limbaugh, and there's no $40 million godforsaken dollars involved with this. The only thing I can do is speak the truth to you. That's my only reward. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Native Americans, First Peoples, Indians, as some of you prefer to be called, you've been ripped off and stolen from for so goddamn long that you've forgotten what it's like to be left alone in peace. And you wonder why sometimes, and you look out on the reservation, and you see the grinding poverty, and your only hope's a goddamn blinking, babbling bingo casino. And you wonder why. If you live on the Black Mesa in Arizona, or if you live in Montana, and you see the open cesspit, hellhole strip mines that have been opened there and were sanctioned on August 3rd, 1977, you know why. And you need to stand up like Mama needs to stand up, and Daddy needs to stand up, and you need to stand up. The African-American community in this country taught us the meaning of the struggle for civil rights. Here in Appalachia and at any other place where strip mining is taking place, from here to Alabama and across the entire country, the 24 states where it takes place, here's a hint. They don't strip mine next to mansion communities. They strip mine next to your home. And from time immemorial, as Jeff Biggers has taught us, the very origins of coal extraction in this country are born on the backs of African-American slaves. And African-Americans were brought into the Appalachian coal fields as strike breakers. And instead joined the United Mine Workers of America. And taught America its first lessons in integration. Because when you come out of that hellhole, everybody's black. We need the African-American community in Appalachia rising. We need you
September the 25th to 27th. Think about it. Are you a feminist? Do you believe in women's rights? Do you believe in equal work for equal pay? Do you believe in an end of the physical abuse that has plagued women for virtually the entire history of this human civilization on the planet? If you want to end it, you have to stop the corporations before you can stop the individuals. And every woman in this country is abused every second of every minute, of every hour, of every day, of every week, of every month, of every year, of every decade, of this entire century, with filth that finds its way into her system. Because in 2010, when we ought to be living that George Jetson life, we're still burning the nastiest damned rock on the planet to keep the lights on. Even though all the energy we could ever need to keep the lights on falls on this planet from the not-so-distant sun, in copious quantities for free every day, and the wind blows and the sun shines. But there's money to be made in that filthy black rock, even if we make it by poisoning the genetics. Of the women who bear our children. Sportsmen. You need to be in Washington, D.C. on September 25th for Appalachia Rising. I don't care where you like to fish or where you like to hunt. By the time the filth and the toxins get downstream, you're going to be hunting birds with one wing. And you best not be wading in those streams, sunshine, because your boots will rot off your feet. And don't get any in your mouth. Recreationalists, ecotourists, you need to be there too. Because the filth in these rivers that you come to whitewater raft down will make you sicker than shit. And it's not because somebody's pumping their poopy straight into the river from their outhouse. It's because there are massive, massive toxic outhouse mountaintop removal sites at the headwaters of the Gauley River. And a foul tide flows into that stream. And when you fall in, as fall in you will, you get baptized in those toxins. And someday maybe, because you were baptized in those environmental toxins, kind of the way Dr. Sandra Steingraber talked about it when we had her on the program a month and a half ago to talk about living downstream. After you've been baptized in those toxins, sunshine, one day something hurts, one day something ain't quite right. One day you go to the doctor and they say, we need to take an x-ray or we need to do a biopsy, and you look up and you go, God damn, I'm dying! You need to be in Washington, D.C. on September 25th to the 27th. Appalachia Rising is a rising for this entire nation, because this entire nation rose out of Appalachia. There is not a tree that grows upon this continent that was not seeded from these lush, green, temperate rainforest hills. Not one. Not a grass. Not a blade. The whole continent was scoured clean in the last ice age. We need 100,000 people, 1 million people. In Washington, D.C. on September the 25th. And yeah, it's kind of nice, because you can come and then you can go. But this is the beginning. It's not all-encompassing. This is something to energize, to raise awareness, to bring to full flower the passionate, patriotic desire to save this country from the predatory wolves of the coal industry. who would sap the last drops of blood out of this very nation if only they thought they could make a dollar doing it. And I'm not done. I'm not done. Because I went down, as I am wont to do, I went down and I had a look at the comments to Jeff Bigger's article at Common Dreams. And somebody said, according to John Buell in today's Common Dreams commentary from far off coal-free Maine. Oh, but he's not far off and he's not coal-free because they're burning mountaintop removal coal in Maine too, John Buell. You're just an extreme ideologue on the left yourself. So I went to the link and I had to have a look at this. And it's by John Buell, who is apparently a political economist who lives in Southwest Harbor, Maine. And it's a reprint from an op-ed of Tuesday, August the 3rd, 2010, in the Bangor Daily News. And apparently John's not happy with radio. He says, recently, on a dull Sunday afternoon, I tuned in a local talk radio program. Talk radio generally pains me, not so much because of the content as the tone. Toned content are not fully savourable, but talk radio often conveys less a consistent position than diffuse anger, dogmatic certainty, and contempt for those of differing views and ways of living. Instead of local voices, I heard Glenn Beck blasting a school in Texas for grading students solely on the basis of the effort expended. Beck raised relevant objections not only with regard to social standards, but also as to students' self-esteem. He then, however, went on to a broad indictment of U.S. public education as dominated by squishy sentimentalism. An ill-defined they had abandoned all rigorous evaluation. I was left wondering where No Child Left Behind had come from, and what evidence is there that effort grading had become predominant, or that effort should not be at least one criterion. Okay, so you get the idea of what we're dealing with here. And this one sort of nailed the door shut with this one, with what follows. Beck has his left counterparts. For some on the left, defenders of free market capitalism are treated simply as greedy. Now see, there's that goddamn Radio Rwanda style book in action. How about a site? How about a link? Something I can click on to prove the validity of the point he just offered. For some on the left, defenders of free market capitalism are treated simply as greedy. Some? How? Please. I'm sure that there are some on the left who think that way. How's about an example? How's about backing up your assertion, your non-fact-based as-yet assertion, with an example? That's called rhetoric. That's also called argument. It's also called debate. Anger and dismissive contempt know no political boundaries. No, I guess not, because I'm pretty contemptuous of this clown. And may be seen as symptoms of deep predicaments that grip all of us. We've got the grip. Part of our predicament is difficulty in articulating or defending the exact nature of our situation. Be darned. I thought I was laying out the exact nature of our situation just about every blessed evening. And then this. And this is where the problem lies.
This goes back to that line from the Playboy article that we cited last night about, you know, confessions of a K Street teabagger or whatever the name of it was, about how they work versus how we work. The anonymous note from earlier this evening talking about the fact that the right wing is very good at leveraging the lizard brain of their acolytes. In addition to consciousness of our own mortality, humans must confront the partial and inevitably finite nature of our knowledge. We carve out our beliefs through a glass darkly, oh, thanks for the St. Paul, i.e. with and against a set of constantly shifting instincts, intuitions, and ideas which we can never fully capture. Somebody get the guitar. I feel an urge to play Kumbaya. Kumbaya, my lord, Kumbaya. Yet we must act in this world. The paradoxical need for action combined with the soft and shifting ground on which some action must be based evoke anxiety. What is this? What we have here is a guy who wants to live in a pretty little world by the seashore and never be troubled by his complicity in, oh, destroying my communities with the electricity he uses and the way that electricity is produced. He never wants to be troubled by the fact that when he wants a hamburger, he can go down to TGI McFunster's, as Tony Bourdain would call it, and order himself a third of a pound Humonga burger, and never think about the cow standing up to its fetlocks in its own waste. Are fetlocks on cows? I don't know. Patty? Cow? Help? Sorry? No. He doesn't want to think about the CAFO, the confined animal farm operation. He doesn't want to think about that. He doesn't want to think about genetically modified, the potentially toxic famine-inducing grain. He doesn't want to think about that. He wants us to get along. Older readers of this column might compare William Buckley's intellectually playful firing line with the bombastic and hostile tone of the O'Reilly factor. Politics will never be a song fest. Ideas and passions are not easily separated. It is hard to advance an idea without some commitment to the argument and without thereby risking anger toward those who don't see our line of thought. You see, there's a problem. We're thinking they're not. And he's playing Kumbaya. And then he comes up with this. And talk about yanking one right out of his... Passions can be reconfigured. Fear of death and finitude can be curbed. The hospice and right to die movements have reshaped the experience of death both for the dying and their loved ones. Christianity itself includes currents contrary to the harsh self-righteousness of Revelation, including a stress upon humility and mercy, judging let not, lest we be judged. Heaven and hell as states of mind, rather than doom. Unitarian Universalists in Maine, because you start that heaven and hell as states of mind rather than domains of reward and punishment crap down here, and they will run you out of town on a rail, John Buell. God, it must be nice living there on Southwest Harbor. Just listening to the water splash on the rocks and going down for a lobster roll once upon a time as I may see fit, and maybe once in a while a burger. You know, I prefer a nice wine, but occasionally I can have a plebeian beer just to remind me of what it's like for the little people. And this thing occasioned a bunch of comments from people who think that he's just some sort of Pollyanna. as compared to people who say, no, people, he's just trying to find a third way. Listen, I'm not trying to be a pain in the ass or anything. But, and I've been explaining this for years. When you extend that olive branch, you're going to draw back a bloody stump. It's that simple. When you try to engage in that logical reason dialogue that John Bill wants, you know what you're going to get? You're going to get this. You're going to get this.
Divine providence leads one to be humble. Manifest destiny leads one to be arrogant. It leads one to say, get the hell out of my way, I'm on a mission from God. And that's what this country is going through. That's what this country, from Andrew Jackson, it led to us wiping out the Indians. It led to the democratically led Reconstruction. It led to the democratically led separation of the races.
Glenn, see, this is what I'm talking about. You say, hey, brother, let's have a safe and sane conversation about the direction of this country. And the other side says, do you know Democrats were responsible for Jim Crow and Reconstruction, even though the Republicans were the dominant party in the House? But see, it's I done heard it on Glenn Beck. And Glenn Beck says it, and I believe it, and that's the end of it.
Woodrow Wilson, I will not drink out of a drinking fountain with a black man. That's quite an amazing story. It's been the story from the beginning with progressives.
Wait till you find out what progressives were responsible for.
That arrogance was already in America. And then they added the European arrogance. And then they added a little bit of socialism. And then they added a little bit of Fabian society. And they came up with this great progressive idea, which led to eugenics, which led to Davenport working an American, trying to tell people here that this is where we're going. We got to just weed out the stupid people. It led to Walter Lippmann, a guy who is absolutely studied by every journalist and praised by every journalist in America as a great man, saying that the American people are stupid. Now we could just weed some of the stupidity out if we could just breed a better voter. Davenport took it so far that even during World War II, while we were fighting the Nazis, he kept lines open to the Nazis to help them with their eugenics. Translation, the Holocaust.
You did it, you liberal! You caused the Holocaust! Damn you!
You know, I could play you the rest of the segment, but I'm not going to do that to you. But suffice to say that Glenn Beck didn't have time to mention the fact that it was the Bush family that were the bankers for the guy who was known as Hitler's angel. Mm-mm, no. Or that, Republican voting Henry Ford and General Motors, that generally, you know, their leadership, again, Republican voting, that they were that really hated the United States entry into the Second World War because they were doing IBM, Republican voting, doing some nice business with the Third Reich. Glenn Beck will certainly also not mention the fact that, you know, Poppy Bush, H.W. Bush's daddy, Prescott, was actually tried and convicted under the Trading with the Enemies Act in 1943, and that's why Poppy Bush had to make such a hasty entry into the United States Navy, becoming the youngest ever aircraft carrier pilot, so that there could be some positive PR to offset the negative PR that was plaguing the Bush family at that time. No. Oh, but there's more. There's more, dude Jesus, there's more.
I'm sorry. I hate to. I'm sorry I filibobstered for so damn long, but this all kind of crawled all over me. All these things just sort of come together in my little mind, and I don't know if they make any sense to you or if I've just given you a whole litany of different and disparate the news stories that have absolutely nothing to do with one another. But to me, they do. Fox News is not news. It's a brand name. It's Radio Rwanda. And what Radio Rwanda is putting out there right now is what you just heard, that Democrats were responsible for the Holocaust. At the same time, that this vicious, hate-filled, rodeo clown entertainer radicalizes people to pour themselves a belly full of 80-proof courage and get in the car with their body armor on and head out to shoot up an organization that the self-same radio clown has declared to be communist and progressive. Ron and Raleigh writing in and say, hey, Bob, am I to believe that Glenn Beck is on my side? He seems just a little bit mixed up. They never mentioned the realignment of the political parties. No, let's don't do that. Because you can't confuse the people who are already confused by the fact that they think they're watching news when they're actually watching Radio Rwanda. Going back to some of the earlier portions of the program, Jim writes in and he says, returning once from lunch when employed at Andrews Air Force Base, the gateway to the nation's capital, I saw a woman who had been evicted sitting in a vacant lot in a lounge chair along with the rest of her furniture in the July sun in an open field directly beneath the glide path of Air Force One as well as all visiting dignitaries flying into the district. I've seen some bad things in my life, but the image of that poor human being has never left me. You can only imagine what the outcome was as scavengers were circling her like vultures hunting carrion. What a vision of America for a visiting dignitary this must have been. And what a vision of the coming America that was. Jim, it was that. It was a vision. It had prophetic qualities because that's like one of those noxious, toxic orchids that only blooms once every 100 years and smells like death incarnate when it does. That is the flower that is blooming in this country as we speak. So I'll put this little filibobster to bed. And we'll take a little break. Hey, it's Tuesday. That means we get green news from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Happy, happy. That's a good thing. So we'll take a little break. A little something in the way of music. Followed by the green news report. We'll come back with your phone calls. All the lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com. It's all that easy. Try out the chat room if you'd like. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience. You'll enjoy it, I'm quite certain. And bring to the table, because we are ahead of the curve, because that's where we live, bring to the table what you think matters. And we'll discuss it. Because first and foremost, this is conversation radio. First and foremost, this is listener-supported conversation radio. Always this. This is the horn. And we'll be back.
You may find yourself living in a shotgun shack. And you may find yourself in another part of the world. And you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. And you may find yourself in a beautiful house. With a beautiful
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, August 3rd, 2010.
Thousands dead in Pakistan floods as temperature records are shattered around the world. Plankton levels fall around the world, and why that matters to you and me. Alarm bells ignored in the new Michigan oil spill. Plus, it's official, the BP oil disaster in the Gulf is now the worst accidental oil spill in the history of mankind.
You're nothing but good news as always, Dez. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Why was Chrysler, why were all these companies in trouble?
I don't know, Rush Limbaugh. Why were they in trouble?
One of the reasons was all of these mandated CAFE standards, all of these regulations. The domestic automobile manufacturers have been forced to design and make cars that fewer and fewer people wanted, because the environmentalist wackos had taken control of the regulatory agencies at the federal government.
So let me get this straight, Rush. U.S. automakers were forced to make Hummers that got 2 miles per gallon that nobody wanted, while Japan was able to make Priuses that everybody wanted? Hey, Rush, is it just me, or at this point, are you just making stuff up? This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is sponsored in part by Velvet Revolution's Stop the Chamber campaign, holding corporate criminals accountable. Please log on, sign in, and donate to StopTheChamber.com today. That's StopTheChamber.com. Okay, Des, the long, hot days of summer continue around the world.
Yes, it's some pretty stunning statistics coming out today, but we'll get to that in a moment. It's a grim situation in Pakistan. Over 1,500 people are confirmed dead after record rainfall in a record monsoon season caused massive flash flooding that wiped out entire villages within minutes. Bridges and roads were also destroyed, slowing relief efforts. 2.5 million people are said to be in need of emergency assistance there. And perversely, last month, Pakistan broke the record for all-time highest temperature ever recorded on the continent of Asia.
Now, we've got 1,500 dead now, at least. We've got hundreds of thousands of troops in the area, actually. Have the U.S. troops been responding at all in Pakistan to help out with this flooding?
Well, as far as I know, the U.S. is not officially in Pakistan, so I know that the U.S. federal government has offered assistance along with other foreign governments. Now, that record in Pakistan is just one of a rash of temperature records falling by the wayside this summer around the Northern Hemisphere. Last week, we reported that Moscow reached 100 degrees for the first time ever in recorded history. Now, this week, Finland has followed, reaching 99 for the first time ever.
And for our Fox News viewers and climate change deniers out there, remember, pay no attention to this report. None of this is happening.
And for those keeping score at home, not only is 2010 shaping up to be the hottest year on record globally, but 2010 is also breaking records for record breaking. Every year, some new temperature records are broken, but this year, 2010, has the dubious honor of being the year with the most extreme national heat records being broken in 1 year. It's now tied with 2007.
Have I mentioned Fox News viewers and climate change deniers should pay no attention?
And now, a very sobering new study came out last week on the state of plankton in the world's oceans. Plankton are the microscopic marine species at the base of the ocean food chain, the tiny little creatures that are also responsible for generating nearly half of the oxygen in our atmosphere. Using long-established methods of data collection, this new study in the prestigious journal Nature concludes that levels of plankton across the world's ocean have dropped some 40% since the 1950s. Now, the researchers themselves caution that this is only one study, and there are other studies planned to test their results. results to see if this is indeed a long-term downward trend. If so, it would represent the single biggest change to the global biosphere in modern times.
And how does that affect us directly?
The loss of plankton at the base of the marine food chain would affect the marine food chain all the way up to the higher orders of fish, the ones that we enjoy for seafood.
So the plankton levels collapse and everything else in the ocean collapses around it?
It's very possible.
Any explanation for why the plankton levels are dropping like this?
The researchers theorize that it's due to warming ocean temperatures. Cold and warm water don't mix as much, so nutrients don't come up from the bottom of the seafloor, and the plankton just can't get their nutrients.
But if the oceans aren't warming, how can this affect the plankton?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on if you believe the oceans are warming or not. Science is real, you know?
Science is real, okay.
Cleanup continues in the oil spill in Michigan from a pipeline that spilled an estimated 1 million gallons into the Kalamazoo River last week. Federal officials today said an alarm sounded for 19 hours before the spill was reported by the oil company. It's official. The BP oil disaster in the Gulf is now the largest accidental spill in human history.
Hey, we're number one. We've heard a lot in the media now about the oil. It's gone. We can't find it anywhere. Is that true?
No, it is not over by a long shot. Last week, the corporate media pounced on the lack of surface oil and said that the disaster was over, or worse yet, it was never that bad. But Billy Nungesser, president of Plaquemines Parish, says that's not true. There is still oil everywhere. All you have to do is look.
You had to either be blind, looking up, lying, or flying at 3,000 feet.
Well, somebody must have been blind, not looking, lying, or flying at 3,000 feet. For more on that and the stories we didn't get to, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The truth is with science. The truth is with science.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
We are halfway through tonight's Tuesday edition of The Horn. Lines open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And I couldn't resist playing that little smidgen of Adam and the Ants and Killer in the Home, because that reference to Geronimo always reminds me of the fact that the lovely, lovely, courteous, pearl-clutching Bush family, that they're paterfamilias, again, Prescott, the same guy who did business with the Nazis, when a young man was involved in an incident at, I believe, Fort Sill, Oklahoma, in which he and some other young soldiers of his ilk went and dug up the skull of Geronimo and donated it to the Skull and Bones Societies for them to have in their crypt or tomb or whatever the hell they call that miserable little clubhouse of theirs. Let us go to the phones. And, hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, you know, you were killing me when you were reading that prig, that writer, the, I don't know, what is that accent you got going? Who is that guy?
Oh, that's my up-east attached liberal pearl-clutching, teeth-clenching, chest-hair-tweaking voice.
Oh, God, and that article is just so... Wow. I mean, you know, it's too disgusting.
And, you know, that's not from 12 years ago. That's today.
No, exactly. No, I'm just sort of, yeah, anyway, that was quite, I was disturbing. The accent really added to the depravity of it all.
Well, you know, as it so often does, because that's a depraved bunch. I'm just sitting here eating my lobster roll here on the Southeast Harbor. Not thinking about all the crap I'm contributing to, but I'm liberal.
Oh, no, and the sort of the left-hating market people, that whole business. I mean, like you said, who? Name one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because...
I hate to sort of make the straw man fake and just, you know, to have an argument when it's just a red herring. It doesn't even exist. In fact, the left. What left, Bob?
Well, yeah. I mean, no. I mean, come on. I mean, let's go to Italy. Let's ask that. Hey, do we have anything like the Italian left? No. The French left? No. The German left? No. No. I mean, we don't even have any vestiges of what's left of the last vestiges of the Russian left.
No, it's just. I mean, it's just. I don't know. I guess I'm sort of. Just stunned by just the level of propaganda that has been unleashed on us, you know, with the right-wing noise machine is definitely winning, you know, or they've won or something because...
Well, again, how can you not go back to that statement from Warren Buffett from a couple of years back where he said, I want to let you know there is a class war in this country and my side's winning.
Oh, no, I mean, just the whole idea that the Obama administration has to even push back on letting these tax cuts expire should tell you where we're at. You see what I mean? The country is just going down the drain.
Right, and Kent Conrad comes out and says, no, we need to keep the rich getting richer and the poor getting... Kent Conrad? Really?
No, it's just incredible. And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, oh, no, there's no way that can happen, you know, that those things have to expire. But... you know, this sort of horrific, lame duck portion of the Congress is, you better watch out for that, Bob. Watch out. A whole bunch of ugly things are going to be trying to go down when that midterm.
There's going to, that's the thing that scares me to death, Sandra. There's going to be a whole bunch of Nixon going to China.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, because December 1st or the 3rd is when that, cat food commission, I have to say it with a straight face,
it's the little Friskies Blue Ribbon panel.
Oh God! So that has to report to Congress, and you remember that Pelosi and Reid already made a deal that they would just sort of do some sort of up and down vote on what they present. These are unelected freaks on this commission.
I think they're cannibals. I think they're flesh eaters. By the way, the guy that talks with his teeth clenched has been named.
Hmm.
Yes, that is Chatsworth Osgood the Fourth.
You?
Yeah, Chatsworth Osgood the Fourth.
Oh, God, it's terrible, terrible. But, I mean, so the lame duck session that's coming up, you know, the sort of, I don't know, I'm sort of thinking just because the GOP is just so awful that maybe they won't. I hope they don't get any House because you know what's coming up. They've announced it. You know, the sort of they're going to be going after Obama with one investigation after another, right? Look ahead, not back. How can the Democrats be falling in this trap again?
It's all a case, Sandra. I don't mean to oversimplify, but it's all a case of what happens when you politic from a position of fear.
It's just incredible for us sort of political geeks out here looking at it who are old enough to remember the Iran-Contra and how Clinton was looking forward, not back, and you see what they did to his ass for that.
Yeah, that looking forward business means that you never see the axe coming at the back of your head.
No, but the fact is Republicans are already announcing before they even get power what they plan on doing, yet and still Obama is still looking forward, not back. Now,
right, and the other thing, Sandra, is that the Democratic Party, I suspect, is trying to engage in this bend like a willow instead of stand like a mighty oak and get blown over by the storm tactic. I think there's a lot of Democrats who just want the teabaggers and such like to the Iraq. Every time I say such like, I have to say the Iraq and South Africa. Sorry. But they want to just let the right wingers and the baggers keep talking. I mean, for instance, you've got this teabagging Senate candidate in Colorado. His name's Ken Buck. I don't know if you saw this today or not, but he says the question was put to him, how do you feel about abortion? Are you for abortion, against abortion, or are you for it? In what instances would you allow for abortion?
I am pro-life, and I'll answer the next question. I don't believe in the exceptions of rape or incest. I believe that the only exception, I guess, is the life of the mother, and that's only if it's truly the life of the mother.
And so the Democrat, just keep talking. We won't have to give anything. We won't have to, you know, because they figure they won't have to make any substantive promises. They won't have to do anything for the poor. They won't have to do anything for the 99ers. They'll just let the batshit crazy wing nuts talk themselves right out of a brilliant opportunity.
Well, no, but the thing is, though, the alternative to them, though, is just not that appealing. I'm really not getting, you know, Obama at all. It's like, dude is, it is so weak. I'm like, how many opportunities do you need to come correct? And, you know, we need someone who's gonna challenge. And I just don't see it. I don't even know how we can even line up for battle, you know? Behind what?
Right. I mean, these are tissue paper thin lines. How do you get behind and say, yeah, great, no more of that nasty unemployment. Come on, make sure that Social Security's dead. Get it done. Hot damn, somebody play me some Lee Greenwood. No. You can't, and you're absolutely right. What's to get excited about?
And, you know, it's just sort of now, you know, he's sort of stepped back from the pulling out from Iraq promise. That's gone down the wayside.
Yeah, last night in that little chat I had after the show was over with our new friend Hernan from Argentina, he gave a list of all the stuff that the Republicans have stopped and that the Democrats have not fought sufficiently for. You know, the Disclose Act, and then for God's sakes, don't ask, don't tell, and the list seems to be endless of stuff that the Republicans have stopped and that we have let them stop us on, that they have caved on.
No, it's incredible, but the thing is, and it's just sort of, you know, I guess it's just the sort of, you know, pseudo-political scientist in me, but watch, if the power should shift in any little manner, we won't hear about 60 anymore.
Oh, no. It'll take 51 votes, and that'll be the end of it.
And it'd just be like something from upside-down world that we've been dealing with since 2006.
You know, the Marty reminding me, he says, remember, Nancy Pelosi had to take impeachment off the table.
Yeah, but then we bring impeachment back on the table, and they'll be talking about impeachment for not even anything. What?
Right. No. Sandra, it'll be for something.
Well,
he will be impeached, and it will be completely logical in the minds of the baggers and birthers and deathers and tenthers and thirteenthers and fourteenthers and, you know, the usual suspect. He will be rightfully impeached for presidenting while black.
Well, okay, yeah, exactly. It'll be like for Clinton getting a BJ. I mean, but the thing is that why is it that the Democrats, for every turn, they're always looking forward, not back? You see what I mean?
Because they're afraid, Sandra. They're afraid to look over their shoulder.
I mean, it's just, you know, I'm starting to feel like, I mean, you know, I don't want to be associated with some weak-ass party that has all branches of government.
Well, how many times? Yeah, how many times? Some weak ass party. How many times have you read Bart Cop? And he says, "If only the Democrats would." And then he types, "Why am I even going to finish this?"
Yeah, I know.
Or some other story, and he'll say, "How did I get stuck in a party of losers?"
Oh my God! But no, losers who are in charge of every branch. This is the thing that really blows my mind. It's just like, anyway. And one thing I want to quickly ask you: listen, what happened to the oil spill and the cleanup? It's over now.
Yes, it is. It's been replaced by summer programming.
It's just bizarre. I'm like, hello.
And now they're. This is beautiful. I saw something today saying that the proposed fine for BP would be $16.9
billion. Oh.
That's not even like half of one quarter's profits.
Wait, what? I had read early on they're talking about $1.2 trillion if you want to monetize that damage, although you can't.
I forget where I was today, but it said BP fine to be $16.9 billion.
Well, what happened to the $4,000? Spilled barrel. What happened to that little law? That law don't apply no more.
I don't think. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, here it is. It was at Think Progress. BP's expected oil disaster fine, $17.6 billion. They've determined that at its height, BP's leaking oil well gushed 62,000 barrels of oil a day.
Okay, so
4.9 million barrels were released before it was temporarily capped last month.
Oh, well, hell, shit, that stock price is a bargain then, ain't it?
Sure it is. But wait. No, they went back to the gumball machine, Sandra, because there's more fun. BP gets a tax refund on the money it spent to contain the mess. And on its PR outlays, they get to write it on their taxes.
Well, and they also get a rebate for their slave labor in Louisiana. I was rolling. I was listening to somebody interviewed. I can't remember who she was. She's saying, oh, wow, why are there so many black people everywhere? You know, there's like 1 in 10 along the coast in Louisiana. And she was wondering, why are all the black people around?
Where did all these Negroes come from?
I thought that was really funny. And then it occurred to her that, oh, oops, I guess that's all prison labor. You know, so that's what they're doing, and they're getting a $2,400 per slave pay tax write-off, too.
Good work if you can get it.
Exactly. But it's just sort of, I don't know, but I'm more disturbed by how it's just whoosh, gone.
Yeah.
Now they're talking about a top kill. Why wasn't all this going on initially? What was the whole 100 days about? Just some sort of parallel universe again?
Yeah, with Captain Kirk with that funky little goatee. You know the one.
So, I was laughing also at Michelle Obama. Oh, we can still eat the shrimp. I'm like, hey, Chicky, you eat that. You better know how it tastes. You know what I mean?
You take the first bite.
Oh! So anyway, yeah, I'm just sort of concerned, you know, because it's the rabbit hole and me... You and a handful of other people seem to be the only rational folks happening these days, and I'm just thinking, hello?
It's a little scary.
Anyway, damn it, I have to bring it up. The Negro, or the black, that lost his mind today.
Yeah, the Phyllis, yeah, that's a black.
No, I'm still rolling.
Phyllis Schlafly, yeah.
Because when you played that, and the way she was saying, the black. It was like something from The Boys from Brazil. You remember that movie?
Jesus.
When Gregory Peck, when he did his rap. Oh, shit. He was the only one who said the blacks like her. It was great. I don't know. Have you seen that movie?
Maybe that's her new nickname. Phyllis Schlafly, the girl from Brazil.
Oh, my God, because...
The woman from Brazil.
It was just so evil when she was talking. I thought, ew, really frightening. And to me, I'm like, why is that dried-up bitch dead? That was my question.
That's the thing. I forget who it was that said it in an email to me a few days ago in regard to Dick Cheney. Evil is a preservative.
Damn, what? That's a good one. Oh, my my God.
But no, what you referred to, and see, I fully expect, you know, and I was gonna kind of roll into it, but I realized I'd been filibustering for like, you know, an hour, filibobstering for an hour and 15 minutes and probably needed to give somebody else a chance. But yeah, that the whole thing with Radio Rwanda is, I guarantee, it's already out there. I promise. If I had, one of these days I will, I'll have the TV piped into the computer and we can all listen as I predict it, and then it happens on Radio Rwanda. This story you sent along, 9 killed in shooting at Connecticut beer distributorship. Here's a working schlub that gets busted stealing a case of beer. And so they bring him in and they can him. And then he comes out and starts shooting, but he's a black. He's a black with a gun. And I guess now the teabaggers are going to have a little conversation about who needs to be allowed to own guns.
Well, you think so? I mean, because, you know, way back when I was sitting around, I don't know who I was hanging out with, I said, oh, dear God, don't let them be black. And then people in D.C. who were shooting people were black. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, damn it. And so when I see these articles, and I said, oh, no, not a Negro. And this one lost his mind talking about nooses and whatnot.
Well, yeah, he said he'd seen the nooses and racial epithets in the break room or restroom or whatever.
Hey.
And then, but I love the journalism involved. Thornton was black. The mother of his girlfriend says he complained of racial discrimination, saying he found a picture of a noose and a racial epithet written on a bathroom wall. The union says Thornton had not filed a complaint of racism. It's Connecticut. Who are you going to complain to?
Right, but no, even the way the article began, it said, a black driver. I was like, oh, shit. And so I just started reading.
I'll be driving, Miss Daisy.
And I don't mean to laugh. I'm not laughing because it's horrible what happened. It's just more sort of the framing and the memes and Radio Rwanda. You understand what I'm saying? Any little bit they get, I'm almost tempted to watch, but I can't even focus my eyes on that station, you know, for fear of them burning out.
I know. But see, and again, I don't want to get too beautiful mind on all of this, but... there was another one today. It was the Grandpa Simpson John McCain who said, my friends, I think we should look at this idea of repealing the 14th Amendment. You know, so that's John Kyle, Lindsey Graham, and John McCain now. John McCain.
Oh, God. I think.
Who was not born in the United States, I might add. Just saying, you know, because you do know that, right, Sandra? I did some research and digging around. He was born at, I forget the name of the hospital, but it was in Panama.
Panama, yeah, I knew that.
But see, everybody says, well, you know, that's the Canal Zone, and that was American territory then. Wrong. He was not born in the Canal Zone. He was born in Panama.
Okay, yeah, no, I thought he was born in Panama, because that sort of came out, and it was kind of just, oh, well, you know, it's that cracker, so who cares, right?
Right. So,
jump on board?
Yeah. So, just to sort of bring this full circle, these fools are going to go messing with the 14th Amendment, right? And they have no idea of the can of worms that they're in the process of opening up. Because then you have to start, okay, well, just because you're born here doesn't mean you're an American. Okay, what if you're born here but only one parent is American? Okay, so that's going to mean that we're going to have a whole bunch of Mexicans marrying our white women. And go from there. And they have no, because, you know, these are knee-jerk responses of the right wing. And as usual, there's not any intellectual process involved with them. It's just, you know, in engage lizard brain, start screaming kind of, you know, process. And so what I'm wondering about, if they feel froggy about tinkering with the 14th Amendment, really, honest to God, why won't they tinker with the Second Amendment and say that a well-regulated necessary being the maintenance being necessary, well-regulated militia being necessary to the maintenance of a free state, the right to keep and bear arms by white people shall not be abridged.
Well, no, but the thing is, I mean, that's why I think I sent you the email saying, oh, well, that's the new slogan, you know, stop offshoring, repeal the 14th Amendment. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just kind of like, it is so dicey even touching that amendment, because that particular amendment made this country somewhat humane. You know what I'm saying? Before the 14th Amendment, this country was a sort of hell on earth for most people. Where it's quickly devolving into that now. But, I mean, they are really trying to take us back.
And they have no conception of where it is they're trying to take us back to, because what I'm trying to get at here, Sandra, is once you open that Pandora's box and you start examining what constitutes citizenship, then it becomes real easy to say me but not you.
Well, no, but look,
you but not them.
But even look what even creating the 14th Amendment, the downside has been the rise of the corporate state. You see, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so I was kind of cringing because I was listening to Hartman. Even this fool is just trying to say, oh, well, maybe they can tinker it, you know, if they add a few words to it. I'm thinking, no, babe, don't take the bait. You see what I'm saying? Because unfortunately.
No, you know, I think what we're getting at, like, whether it's Social Security or Medicare or the 14th flipping amendment, is that some things in America are worth drawing a line in the sand over. And these are them. Social Security, my God, you know, they're doing this Social Security's going broke song and dance again that got discredited in 2004, got discredited in 2000. Social Security is solvent.
Yeah, it's not an offset program. It's a standalone program which has been paid. It's been paid
for. It is rock solid solvent for every benefit, every penny that will be paid out through 2037. And then if it stands as is, it goes to 75% solvent.
No.
It ain't in the red.
No, all this is about is, you know, keeping, not taxing the rich, I swear. That's the sort of base for all this.
You know, Ron in Raleigh writing in about Phyllis Schlafly and the blacks. He says, God bless Ronnie. He says, I'm just surprised she didn't say the Schwarzes.
Oh, no.
And also asks, does this mean that I get to revert back to being 3/5 of a person?
What, for the 14th?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. No. I mean, it's so froth, but it's like, I can't, you know, like you're saying, it's just a can of worms. But what's really frightening is how stupid people are, so it's starting to gain traction along with the for-profit media thing. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, and see, that's the thing.
It's bubbling up.
That's the thing, and if you consider how long it's taken to do the bubbling, I think I was still on terrestrial radio in America's fifth smallest radio market. I was still on the terrestrial radio when I had the story of the Tuscaloosa chapter of the Daughters of the Confederacy or whatever, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and they were raising money by selling anchor babies. And so that means this is around 2004, 2005. It's 2010 now. That is how long they've been working quietly, slowly, patiently, working this issue of the anchor baby. They were the Tuscaloosa chapter of the maybe it was the Alabama GOP. Maybe it was the Tuscaloosa County chapter of the Alabama GOP, not the Daughters of the Confederacy. But whatever it was some women's group, and they were fundraising by selling anchor babies. I don't know if it came with a noose around its neck, but they were doing it. And that was 4 or 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, and if you combined it with the terrifying economic situation, along with just stupid people sitting around saying, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know what I mean? It's really frightening what's going on. I, you know, Lindsey Graham, that faggot, what in the world?
Life in glass houses.
Oh, my God. And,
but this is a guy who 2 years ago said that he wanted to introduce immigration reform. And in 2 years' time, he has been turned. He hasn't turned. He has been turned by the teabaggers, because they are literally hanging and burning him in effigy in South Carolina now. And he's not even on the electoral ballot, and they're already doing it. And it is scaring him wet bottomed.
Well, he's up when in 2012 or something.
Yeah, I think 12.
Oh no! And so they're all going to pull out all the fascist stuff now. Anyway, listen, I'll let you go. I'm sure you have other people, but yikes! Oh, what's the latest with Brett Favre? I heard something.
All I heard was that he had a sore ankle and was going to make an announcement today.
Bless him. Let's get it started.
Well, you know, we're done talking about the oil spill, so, you know, Brett Favre's next.
Oh, my God. Anyway, listen, have a nice evening.
You too, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. I'm so glad the oil spill's over and we can just go back to worrying about Brett Favre. Jesus. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
How you doing today?
Good, good. How about you?
Oh, okay. I'll listen to your program and just thinking about some of the things that have been said here.
Yeah, I packed a lot into that first hour and 18 minutes, I think.
Yeah, and thanks for reading that email about that person I saw. Incidentally, the individual who was sitting in that last chair was a black female.
And not being sure what the time frame of it is, Jim, I'm sure that there may well have been a greasy-headed old B-movie actor in the White House who was quite certain she was a welfare queen.
Well, it was during the Clinton administration, but the thing about it...
No, okay, so that's, that's a little better.
Yeah, and surrounding her were deputies from the Prince George's County Police. To ensure that, she would be properly removed.
See, that's the thing that happens, and we so seldom pay attention. Well, I won't say we so seldom pay attention, but we have to be sort of at the height of our observational powers on any given day, because you never know when the curtains are going to part, Jim, and you're going to be handed a little piece of a little vision of the future, a little piece of prophecy, because, you know, there is a whole lot of just because of the way I was brought up, the way I was educated, the kind of person I am. There's a whole lot of there, but for the grace of God goes John Smith in me. And there's a whole lot of, no man is an island unto himself.
Well,
I was raised on that stuff.
Exactly.
And that's why, anytime I go to D.C. and I'm downtown, I get the pitch put on me by some person down on their luck. Whatever's in my pocket's coming out. Because it's not like I'm buying insurance against that ever happening to me. It really is. You know, some of that stuff that happened in the basement of the Southern Baptist Church that the little old blue-haired ladies taught me, the good part of it all, stuck. And you feel some sense of obligation, and you feel some sense of camaraderie, and you feel some sense of compassion. I've looked at guys I forget the street that runs through Chinatown. But I looked, I've looked at him and said, listen, you say you want money for, so you can afford a meal at the mission or you get a cot at the mission or whatever. I said, here, take this. And frankly, if you need it because you got to get a bottle, get the bottle. Don't think that I'm going to sit here and sermonize at you.
No. Listen, I walked through the Castro in San Francisco and had people on the street, and you can see the lesions of KS on their face, ask me for a dollar or whatever I could spare. And I thought to myself, my God, this is America, and there is no mechanism by which these people can be taken care of. I do realize that things have gotten a little better in that particular area. But it's just another case of man's inhumanity to man. And going back to this 14th Amendment thing, now they're trying to tinker with that. Now, I'm no scholar of the law, but I know enough about the 14th Amendment to realize that in addition to the citizenship areas of that particular amendment, you have due process as part of it.
Yes.
You cannot be deprived of life, liberty, property without due process of law. And if they want to start tinkering with that, that will decrease the power of the Constitution by at least 50%.
I think you're right.
Exactly. I mean, I remember constitutional law classes in which that was one of the greatest emphasis by my professors. And if I don't know, I don't understand how these people can start tinkering with something like that. But who knows?
You know, I've mentioned on a number of occasions, Jim, that my favorite American writer is Mark Twain.
Right.
And he had a short piece called My Pocket Watch. And it's one of the, and with the great good humor that he brought to, you know, every topic that he touched, he epitomized the idea that, you know, fools rush in where angels fear to tread.
Yes, sir.
And you know what? You don't want to fool with the innards of your watch, and you don't want to fool with something like the 14th Amendment.
No, you do not.
Because the law of unintended consequences is, and I don't know, and that's the whole thing with these baggers and birthers and deathers and tenthers and 14thers, 13thers, and so forth. They don't understand, they have no conception of the law of unintended consequences. Because once you open up the Pandora's box to tinker with the 14th Amendment, bad things are going to happen.
Oh, you're going to unleash all of the evil in the world, or in this country, or the individuals who that particular amendment, number 14, was intended to protect. And, you know, good Lord.
I mean, it's every now and then somebody on our side of the argument will say, you know what we need? We need a constitutional convention. And those mere words just make me want to crawl into the corner, to pull myself up into a fetal ball and suck my thumb and weep. Because I can just imagine a constitutional convention in 2010, Jim. And mark my words, we probably aren't far from a teabagger cry for one of those, too. Can you imagine a constitutional convention and corporate America getting its blood-soaked claws into that and frankly, we would become almost overnight a fascist dictatorship?
Outside my door, I set up a bistro table with a blue tablecloth with an American flag behind it. And on that table is a Department 56 model of Independence Hall. And it's lit 24/7. And on that table are a number of things about the importance of this country. And I have these little pocket copies of the Constitution. You know, for anybody that walks by that they can pick up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I realize it's not a whole lot, but it's just my way of trying to remind the people of what that Constitution means. Of course, that Constitution, in my opinion, doesn't mean a whole lot to some of these people who are broadcasting over these right-wing radio stations and people like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, and I'm not going to go through the whole litany of those idiots, but, you know, they are no better in my mind than people like Axis Sally or Lord Haw-Haw, the ones who broadcasted for Hitler in World War II. I'm not going to mention Tokyo Rose because I think she really got a very bad deal and was really trapped in the situation. And, of course, she was one of many people, and they just happened to label it on her because they needed a scapegoat. But these people are no better than those traitors who went over to the Axis and who broadcast all of these things in an attempt to demoralize the fighting spirit of the American serviceman as well as, well, it came through the DNB, the Deutsche Nachrichtenbüro, the German news agency, and their other agency, which was called, by the way, Transocean, to use propaganda as a way of defending Nazism and all of the horrible things that it represented. That's the way I regard these people. I mean, they're basically neo-fascists, and they're no better.
And they are marching all the way to Nuremberg, Jim, while at the same time screaming that Democrats were responsible for the Holocaust.
You know,
I mean, no wonder they can't maintain a coherent thought in their heads. Have you ever read what it looks like when one of them tries to type a paragraph and they start getting angry? I saw an example of that last night. Somebody included me in a Facebook posting. Innocently enough, it was of a brilliant monologue by Mike Malloy, and some wingnuts got included in it. And the next thing you know, my email was just absolutely smoking from wingnuts typing poorly onto Facebook, and I resisted the urge. I didn't type back. I was so proud of myself. That means I'm learning. I'm becoming more enlightened, I suppose. Because I have no time for these people. I won't allow them on my program. I won't, I do not believe in this precious amount of time that we have, these 3 hours every night, and they've got 10 hours for every hour I do of right-wing radio versus liberal radio. They can go and spout their filth somewhere else. But the point here is that it's no wonder that these wingnuts, these baggers and so forth, these tea baggers and birthers and so forth, they live in a world. And the only thing I can compare it to, Jim, is I'm sure you know what the condition called tinnitus is.
Yes, I do.
It's horrible for anyone who has it. I have occasional little bouts of it from all my years with headphones on my ears. And when it comes in, it's maddening because it becomes the only damn thing you can hear. And it must be a little bit like that. Because the teabagger brain is just filled with cognitive dissonance. It's things that they want to say they believe in on one hand, being hammered into the shape and form that the fascist corporatist the crowd wants it to be, by feeding on their fears, by feeding on their hates, by trading on their bigotries. And at the same time, you know, there's probably a little bit of conscience banging around in there somewhere. And it's got to set up a squeal, something like a 10 kilohertz tone between their ears. And for that, to the extent that I can manifest it just because of the way I am, I pity the bastards.
I don't. I really don't. I mean, you know, you and I go back a long way. We go all the way back to 2004 when I first heard you. And we had many conversations about this sort of thing. We did. And at one time I thought, you know, well, let's hear what they have to say. But as the years have passed, particularly after the election of 2004, I began to realize I just don't want to listen to what they have to say because I know what they're going to say. And I know what they're going to say is going to take the truth and they're going to transmogrify it. They're going to take 1% truth and 99% fascist propaganda, and they're going to try to take advantage of some listener who doesn't have sense enough or political awareness enough or the basic education enough to realize that they're being victimized. And I just don't have any place for these people anymore. You know, I just, you know, my sense of tolerance for them has gone from 75% to 50% to 25% to absolute zero. Because, you know, every time I hear them over their mouth, they twist, they turn.
Yeah, and exactly, Jim. And you know, if I was a little more well-known out there and the right wing was more into hating me, this would make this the rounds of the internet in the space of about, you know, 10 minutes in right wing internet world. But I'm going to say it anyway. I listen to Glenn Beck and I understand Robespierre.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, good God. Talk about revolutions devouring their own children. I mean, Robespierre.
And yeah, what I'm getting at is that if these right-wingers get their way, they will then turn, and the best example is always the religion industry, and the best example is always prayer in schools. If they got their way, and they got Congress to pass some sort of a constitutional amendment mandating prayer in the public schools, you would see them start shooting at each other over what the prayer would be. And cries of heresy and apostasy would ring around this land. And they, and you know, the rest of us, the normal people, could sit back and just, you know, watch the, and just, you know, watch the show. But they'd start tearing at each other. And that's what's going to happen with the 14th Amendment. And that's what would happen with the Constitutional Convention. You know, David in Tennessee just said to me, he said, I make it even money that Glenn Beck has constitutional convention on his August 28th agenda at the Lincoln Memorial. Want to bet? And I told him, no, I won't take the bet because I don't want to lose the money. I guarantee you, it's already in the script.
Well, now, you know, what's going to happen is, you know, what they would like to happen is for these things to be a force multiplier and to increase geometrically to the point that, you know, they're going to subvert every element of decency that is enshrined in that document.
Yes. You know, that's what I was, and they're patient about it. That's what I was, that's the point that I was making in talking with Sandra about, and you know, like you said, you've been with me since 2004. I think it was that far back when that, the Alabama Republican Women's Club or whatever it was fundraising by selling Anchor Baby dolls.
I remember it well. I do.
And it's just burbled along under the surface, and I think I was the only person anywhere with a microphone in front of his face who said a word about it.
I believe you were. Yes, sir. Absolutely. And, you know, you got to remember, just look back through history. And here I am going back to the Third Reich. How did Adolf Hitler come to power? First, he tried revolution, and then he realized that wouldn't work. So he got into the Constitution, got into politics, and gradually came into power using the existing levers of power that existed under the Weimar Constitution. And the rest, as we know, was history. And before long, he became the head of state. And
yeah, what did Paul Hindenburg say? I'll manage this Hitler.
Well, they all thought they could put him on a leash. And Ludendorff wrote Hindenburg and say, you will regret for the rest of your life and throughout eternity for any part that you have played in allowing this man to get into the government as Reich Chancellor. And, of course, a year later, Hindenburg died. The Enabling Act was passed by the Reichstag, and Hitler, the two offices were combined for Minister, President, and Chancellor into one word, Führer.
Game on.
And from that point forward, for the, you know, everyone in the army was swearing allegiance to him, not to the country, but to him personally. And what I have said many times, this can happen again. It can happen here, as it has happened so many other places. And we are seeing, in my opinion, and God, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, because I don't say these words, you know, without prior thought. It can happen again, and it will happen again if these people have their way. And I have, just today, I have heard people like Sarah Palin and other fellow travelers starting to take their pot shots and prepare. And these people have very cunningly and very slowly and very methodically pay their way to power, just the way Adolf Hitler did between 1933 and 1935.
It's not hard to see, is it, Jim?
And they, and you know, of course, passed the Nuremberg Laws, which excluded the Jews from, you know, civil society.
Right.
And
what's the difference? What frankly is the difference between doing that and tinkering with the 14th Amendment to make sure that you make the lives more miserable of our own helots, our own immigrant population in the Latino community?
And you see, it's all being done legally.
You know, you've got a guy in Arizona calling for power companies to cut off the electricity to anyone they deem to be illegal. In a desert, in July, he did that.
Well, what is the difference between that and the excesses of the Nazis?
See, I don't see much, Jim. I don't see much difference.
I don't either. And, you know, with each passing quarter or each passing election, now it's become almost with each passing day, as I see the forces of darkness gathering. And they are gathering with tremendous strength. And they have the money, just as Hitler had the money, because that's one of the reasons he was able to get into power, because he made his power base with the wealthy industrialists in Germany, just like the ones that you mentioned that one of the Bush family members did business with. I believe the guy's name was Fritz Thyssen.
Yes.
And he wound up in a concentration camp.
Hitler turned on him.
IG Farben. And, you know, once they've used these people, they don't care what happens to them.
No, you're absolutely right.
And if they'll do that to the people who supported them, what will they do to the people who oppose them? I mean, you know, good God. Dachau.
Bergen-Belsen.
I mean, really, it's something that really, well, I don't like to talk about it, and I know people probably don't like to hear it, but...
Well, that's the thing, though. That's the thing I hate about the so-called Godwin's Law on the Internet, that the reductio ad Hitlerum, that any time you mention the Third Reich, you've lost the argument. That means that no one can ever reference the parallels, even if the parallels are striking and plain. That we have somehow established Nazi Germany as the benchmark of the potential of all human evil. Well, frankly, you know, I had that piece published over at Down With Tyranny blog, and the banner there cites the following quote from Sinclair Lewis: "When fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying the cross." You know what? Germany wrapped itself in the flag and carried the cross too. But this idea that we can't, if you cannot look back at that history and make comparisons when things are getting dangerous in your own country, doesn't that increase the net likelihood, Jim, that it will happen again?
Of course. Look at this, Bob, and I'm not trying to take up too much of your time because I know other people need to talk. But in the film A Judgment in Nuremberg, the advocate for the defense, played by Maximilian Schell, cited certain things in American history, okay? One of which was, for example, sterilization. And he brought forth very ably, and I checked this out, that the American jurist Oliver Wendell Holmes said that whenever there was an instance of two or three generations in which mental illnesses, which could range from just depression to any other things, then Oliver Wendell Holmes advocated sterilization.
And it's true.
And as far as Hitler is concerned, who gave him his first legitimate position in the eyes of the world? It was a concordat concluded with Hitler and the Roman Catholic Church. And, of course, the papal nuncio, who was extremely involved in that, was later to become Pius XI. And like I say, it all came to pass legally, and they used the levers of power to access them in, and once they got in, the other 32 parties that existed in Germany before Hitler took power all of a sudden vanished, and people began to disappear into the night and fog. And that's where they want us to go. They want people, poor people, they want people who don't subscribe to their doctrine to disappear into the night and fog.
I ain't going quietly, Jim, and I got a feeling you won't either.
Bob, what can you do? It's like you once said, that I think it was Pastor Neil Muller who made the statement when they came for so-and-so.
I said nothing.
Anything. And then when they came for so-and-so, I didn't do anything. And when they came for me, it was too damn late for me to do anything.
Because everybody else was already gone.
Exactly.
And so, you know, Jim, I think you point in the direction of why all this exists, why these 3 hours a night have been happening for more than 6 years now.
And, you know, I have constantly made references to that particular situation in Germany, how an ancient and honorable people who could be subjected and converted. And I will say one final thing. And one of the major paving stones on Hitler's rise to power was the injustice with which Germany was treated after the end of World War I.
Absolutely. The seeds of the Third Reich were sown in part by David Lloyd George and Clemenceau.
Exactly. And
over the manifest objections of Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson had to sit between those two men to keep them from actually coming to physical blows.
And then, lest we forget, especially given the history lesson that Glenn Beck, the phony baloney history lesson that Glenn Beck provided, Woodrow Wilson came back home to the United States, destroyed his health, trying to get the League of Nations Treaty passed by the Senate, and sprouted daggers out of his back that were placed there not by Democrats, but by members of the Republican Party.
Henry Cabot Lodge.
Yes, sir.
And that, it killed that man. Because, I mean, Wilson came there as an honest broker trying to, you know, prevent this another horror from happening as the horror of World War I occurred. But you know what is so ironic? And I'll let you go on this. After Hitler became chancellor and after he has established his power, David Lloyd George was one of the representatives who came to see Hitler and praised what he had done for Germany.
Yes.
He was in his retreat at the Berghof at Berchtesgaden, his mountain retreat. And I've seen it on film, and I've seen pictures of the menu cards that were signed by both men. And it's just amazing how people just give in and forget.
No, and right, and I mean, you know, it didn't take you an instant, Jim, to say Henry Cabot Lodge. If you gave a multiple choice test to 98% of Americans and said, "What is Henry Cabot Lodge?" 98% of Americans would answer a hotel chain.
They probably would. I'm sure they would. Yeah, they don't know. And here's the thing: history.
But see, you and I are laying this out chapter and verse, Jim, and it doesn't happen in our schools. It's not taught. You've got to take probably graduate-level history to learn this stuff. And the fact of the matter is, even our Democratic Party, well, you know, because remember, like Sandra said, we got to look forward. We can't be looking back. But God Almighty, 60 million human beings died in part because of the vanity and hatred of the Republican Senate of the United States in refusing to make the United States part of the League of Nations that could have stopped, could have averted the Second World War. And the Republicans stopped it.
They sure did. And people just didn't care. They said, well, it's, you know, it's not happening over here. It's happening over there. And, you know, and I hate to say this, but even Gertrude Stein in 1937 thought that Hitler should be nominated for the Nobel
Peace Prize. Yes, I know.
And, you know, I will stop now. I'm taking too much of your time. But, I mean, one other thing. When I mention this business about Hitler and Nazism, it's not because I admire him. It's not because I think that what he did was wonderful. It's because I realize the horror of his ability to return in the personalities of so many people who are alive and well today.
Absolutely, Jim, and I don't want to keep you any longer either, but the fact of the matter is, that's what I think I was trying to point toward. We have this notion that only Hitler can be Hitler, okay? That if there's ever going to be another one, we'll know him right away because he's going to have a tawdry little Charlie Chaplin mustache and wear khaki.
Not so. Not so. And listen, I thank you for your time, and I'm sorry to have...
Do not apologize. This has been necessary background. Like I said, it ain't happening anywhere. There's not many places in America where this conversation is even permitted to happen. And by God, if it can happen here, more the better.
I'm afraid you're right, Bob. But listen, good night and have a good program.
Thank you, Jim, and a good night to you too, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Email just came in from Patty up on the High Plains. Noting, as was noted on air, the 14th Amendment is about equal protection, not just birthrights. She says, MF-er, this level just keeps clicking back and forth and is perpetual. They just hope we miss a tick or a tock. Watch the shiny keys. Don't look over there. Move along. Nothing to see here. She signs it Patty, who most days feels like she was dropped on a planet she's never been to before. I know the feeling. I know the feeling. I mentioned something, and just perhaps to lighten the mood a bit, but it's lightened only by virtue of the genius of the writer and not by the subject matter. This is, you know, and again, you can find it online. It's the name of the piece is My Watch, An Instructive Little Tale. My hero, Mark Twain, wrote it. 1870, 140 years ago. 140 years ago. And it's so much more than about watches. But he says, my beautiful new watch had run 18 months without losing or gaining, and without breaking any part of its machinery or stopping. I had come to believe it infallible in its judgments about the time of day, and to consider its constitution and its anatomy imperishable. But at last, one night, I let it run down. I grieved about it as if it were a recognized messenger and forerunner of calamity. But by and by, I cheered up, set the watch by guess, and commanded my bodings and superstitions to depart. Next day, I stepped into the chief jeweler's to set it by the exact time, and the head of the establishment took it out of my hand and proceeded to set it for me. Then he said, she's 4 minutes slow. Regulator wants pushing up. I tried to stop him. Tried to make him understand that the watch kept perfect time. But no. All this human cabbage could see was that the watch was 4 minutes slow. And the regulator must be pushed up a little. And so, while I danced around him in anguish and implored him to let the watch alone, he calmly and cruelly did the shameful deed. My watch began to gain. It gained faster and faster day by day. Within the week, it sickened to a raging fever, and its pulse went up to 150 in the shade. At the end of 2 months, it had left all the timepieces of the town far in the rear and was a fraction over 13 days ahead of the almanac. It was away into November enjoying the snow while the October leaves were still turning. It hurried up house rent, bills payable, and such things in such a ruinous way that I could not abide it. I took it to the watchmaker to be regulated. He asked me if I'd ever had it repaired. I said no, it had never needed any repairing. He looked a look of vicious happiness and eagerly pried the watch open and then put a small dice box into his eye and peered into its machinery. He said it wanted cleaning and oiling, besides regulating, come in a week. After being cleaned and oiled and regulated, my watch slowed down to that degree that it ticked like a tolling bell. I began to be left by trains. I failed all appointments. I got to missing my dinner. My watch strung out 3 days' grace to four and let me go to protest. I gradually drifted back into yesterday and then day before and then into last week, and by the comprehension came upon me that all solitary and alone I was lingering along in week before last, and the world was out of sight. I seemed to detect in myself a sort of sneaking fellow feeling for the mummy in the museum and desire to swap news with him. I went to a watchmaker again. He took the watch all to pieces while I waited and then said the barrel was swelled. He said he could reduce it in 3 days. After this, the watch averaged well, but nothing more. For half a day, it would go like the very mischief and keep up such a barking and wheezing and whooping and sneezing and snorting that I could not hear myself think for the disturbance. And as long as it held out, there was not a watch in the land that stood any chance against it. But the rest of the day, it would keep on slowing down and fooling along until all the clocks it had left behind caught up again. So at last, at the end of 24 hours, it would trot up to the judge's stand all right and just in time. It would show a fair and square average, and no man could say it had done more or less than its duty. But a correct average is only a mild virtue in a watch. And I took this instrument to another watchmaker. He said the king bolt was broken. I said I was glad it was nothing more serious. To tell the plain truth, I had no idea what the king bolt was, but I did not choose to appear ignorant to a stranger. He repaired the king bolt, but what the watch gained in one way, it lost in another. It would run a while and then stop a while and then run a while again and so on, using its own discretion about the intervals. And every time it went off, it kicked back like a musket. I patted my breast for a few days, but finally took the watch to another watchmaker. He picked it all to pieces and turned the ruin over and over under his glass, and then he said there appeared to be something the matter with the hair trigger. He fixed it and gave it a fresh start. It did well now, except that always at 10 minutes to 10, the hands would shut together like a pair of scissors, and from that time forth they would travel together. The oldest man in the world could not make head or tail of the time of day by such a watch, and so I went again to have the thing repaired. This person said that the crystal had got bent and that the mainspring was not straight. He also remarked that part of the works needed half-soling. He made these things all right, and then my timepiece performed unexceptionably. Save that now and then, after working along quietly for nearly 8 hours, everything inside would let go all of a sudden, begin to buzz like a bee, and the hands would straightway begin to spin around and round so fast their individuality was lost completely. And they simply seemed a delicate spider's web over the face of the watch. She'd reel off the decks 24 hours in 6 or 7 minutes and then stop with a bang. And I went with a heavy heart to one more watchmaker and looked on while he took her to pieces. Then I prepared to cross-question him rigidly, for this thing was getting serious. The watch had cost $200 originally, and I seemed to have paid out $2,000 or $3,000 for repairs. While I waited and looked on, I presently recognized in this watchmaker an old acquaintance. A steamboat engineer of other days, and not a good engineer either. He examined all the parts carefully, just as the other watchmakers had done, and then delivered his verdict with the same confidence of manner. He said, "She makes too much steam. You want to hang the monkey wrench on the safety valve." I brained him on the spot and had him buried at my own expense. My Uncle William, now deceased, alas, used to say that a good horse was a good horse until it had run away once, and that a good watch was a good watch until the repairers got a chance at it, and he used to wonder what became of all the unsuccessful tinkers and gunsmiths and shoemakers and engineers and blacksmiths. But nobody could ever tell him. And that's why I want a monument built to Mark Twain. I think maybe walking across the waters of the reflecting pool in front of the Lincoln Memorial would be a nice thing. The 700-foot high statue taller than the Washington Monument. For there is more profundity in what most people take for the at best slick comedy in Mark Twain than there are in just about every other thing that's been written in this country. A little essay on a watch becomes a cautionary tale about tinkering with things that are already working just fine. And the 14th Amendment is working just fine. Save for the fact that, you know, corporations sort of got grandfathered into it. It was working just fine. And these dumb bastards, these stupid-ass teabaggers, these dead-from-the-neck-up conservatives, want to pry the back off of it? Dump the guts out on the table and hope that they get a 14th Amendment again when they put it back together. Oh, it'll be just fine. Oh, shit, I'm not a citizen anymore. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. By the way, before I go back to the phones, a couple of lines open if you want to finish out the evening. Before I go back to the phones, a little piece of good news. I got a note from Ben Birch. He says, almost out of the woods. Another $15 and I can make the payment. Thanks to everybody so very much for the help. Another $15 and Ben Birch can make sure that the horn keeps going. God. You will forgive me if I say that sometimes that makes me just want to run screaming around the room. We sweat septic tanks and $15. Think about that. $15. And we sweat it. And the other side has 1,000 hours of talk radio for every hour there is of ours. And John Buell is sitting by the South Side Bay in Maine somewhere, worrying about whether my side is being civil enough. Oh, hell. Oh, Margaret. Makes me want to go vomit on his lobster roll. Really, it does. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Not much, tearing my hair out. Banging my head into the wall, but...
Well, what was your hair doing for you anyway?
Keeping the wind from blowing my dandruff everywhere. Do you remember dimly the original Twilight Zone?
Oh, gosh, yes. I remember most things dimly because I'm pretty damn dim in the first place, Cossack.
There was a wonderful... episode in season 4 called He's Alive. You recall that one?
Not by title, no.
Okay. Let me just give you the closing narration. It's only a short paragraph.
Okay.
And this will sum it up for you. Where will he go next, this phantom from another time, this resurrected ghost of a previous nightmare? Chicago, Los Angeles, Miami, Florida, Vincennes, Indiana, Syracuse, New York, any place, every place, where there's hate, where there's prejudice, where there's bigotry, he's alive. He's alive so long as these evils exist. Remember that when he comes to your town. Remember when you hear his voice speaking to others. Remember when you hear a name called, a minority attacked. Any blind, unreasoning assault on a people or any human being. He's alive because through these things we keep him alive. And what it's about is Hitler speaking through, you know, his student, Dennis Hopper.
Okay, that episode, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about the greatest generation, and we neglect the fact that among the greatest were people like Sterling,
and most of the people who played for him. You realize...
There were so many, and again, I think Rod Serling recognized with the Twilight Zone, Cossack, that you cannot teach people lessons, that you cannot get into the sort of the American mindset by telling them by giving them their liquor straight, no chaser. It's good. You got to mix some juice in it and put an umbrella in the top. It's the same reason Jesus talked in parables. Not that I'm comparing Rod Serling and Jesus, but it's the same principle. You know, it's the same thing with the monsters are due on Maple Street.
Exactly.
It's the same thing with the episode in which the one episode in which George Goober Lindsay played.
Right.
There was a lot in there about hatred and intolerance. And, you know, it's amazing the way, Cossack, that that ideas tie together even within this show. Because a few minutes ago, as I was talking with Jim, David in Tennessee sent me the following. He said, let's go back to a key moment in our country's history. How long would we, all of us, have waited for school desegregation had the majority had its way? Just asking. 1980, wouldn't have happened under Reagan. 1968, wouldn't have happened under Nixon. Wouldn't have happened under Ford.
No.
Would it have happened under Poppy Bush? Would it have happened under W? Hell no. Because, you know, all this, we the people want our country back. All this teabagging bullshit, Cossack, has the reason that it has a very real, very dangerous tinge to it is because it is about tyranny. They keep hollering about majority rule, but they don't understand that for majority rule to be validated, it has to be predicated upon the measure of how that majority treats those who are not as powerful as them.
Right.
And in this particular case, the baggers have the power, they have the hatred, and their enablers, the right-wing corporate structure of America, have the for-profit media. This is a poisonous, poisonous recipe.
Well, it is. And, you know, it's like, on the one hand, you hear the all the people who brood about the idea of the greatest generation. It's a nice talking point. But Reagan wasn't of that generation. He never exposed his butt. Neither did John Wayne. Oddly enough. And yet, Serling was a highly decorated war veteran. Most of the people he had playing for him were highly decorated. Remember Charles Bronson?
Absolutely.
A decorated war veteran. Claude Aiken, another one. Virtually everyone that played with him of the males were all veterans. And you didn't hear them running around beating on sliding and saying, look at me, I'm great. Because of what we did. They just did it.
And having just danced a butcher's dance with fascism, you didn't hear them coming. They were not the ones who came back hollering about the race mixing.
No. Quite the opposite. Quite the opposite.
You know, George Wallace was some sort of a bombardier, navigator, radioman, or something, on a bomber in the South Pacific, and he got seconded home because he came unglued, if I recall my history correctly.
Yeah.
He came unglued and got sent home. And then, you know, the whole thing starts with, you know, I'll never be out N-worded again, and the next thing you know, he's in a schoolhouse door.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about. But the thing is, that kind of hatred is never espoused by people who have the touch of heroism about them, Cossack.
No.
It never is.
And here's the problem that I have with the teabaggers and so forth. On the one hand, I can understand why they're angry, and they have a right to be angry. They've been screwed.
But they're mad. Right. They're wrong for the wrong reasons.
Exactly. They're screwed, but what they're doing is they're enabling the people that screwed them.
Can't tell them that, though. And that's the whole point. You can't tell them that. If I espoused that sweet and loving angelic countenance that this clown in Maine wants people to have, and you know, took my little tambourine and ukulele and played Kumbaya for the teabaggers, they'd tear my head off and crap down my neck, because that's what kind of people they are, and that is the degree, Cossack, to which they have been radicalized and violentized, and the degree to which the tinnitus inside their brain has been ramped up to something that makes them into nothing more than a psychotic mess.
Yeah. And it's like going around down here, you'd be amazed at the number of McCain-Palin stickers stuck all over these poor bastards' cars, people who you know are not wealthy.
Well, that's because she knows what it means to love Merca.
Because they're idiots. They don't love America. They love their little ideal. They want to have Father Knows Best come back from the 50s, from the grave. And it wasn't happening back then. I know, I was around, you know. It wasn't as wonderful as we like to think it was. If you're white and middle class, yes it was. It was a wonderful time to be white and middle class in this country, in the 50s.
Yeah, you know, back when we were burning crosses in people's yards.
Well, they weren't burning them in your yard, you know.
Right. Do you remember that sheriff from Jackson County, Alabama, Cossack? The one said, "I want to go back to 1948. When the women's wore their dresses with their poodles on them, and the homosexuals had the common decency to be doing their homosexual things back where we couldn't see them."
I mean, you want to go back to 48? You want to go back to strange fruit? You know, do we really want that? I mean, you still have it down here, Bob. You still have it down here. You know that as well as I do.
Oh, hell yes.
There are people who cannot get...
And the thing is, Cossack, maybe people outside the region can't understand how it is that the Southerners, liberal Southerners especially, have such a profound and probably highly dysfunctional love-hate relationship with the people of their region.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Billy Bob can get in up to his shoulders inside your engine block and make it go.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimbo over there has a secret recipe for catfish bait that just'll have them slaying your line all day long, and he won't hesitate to share it with you. And Billy Bob if you're somebody that Billy Bob knows, will hair lip hell to get your car going.
Mm-hmm.
And then tell you that joke about the Kentucky Fried Chicken Hillary Clinton special, two left wings and a small breast. the drive-by truckers. David reminds me, the drive-by truckers coined this. Southern rock opera. Patterson Hood pointed to what he called the duality of the Southern thing, which probably should he ever choose to pursue it, would probably qualify a Patterson for a Ph.D. in philosophy or sociology from any Ivy League school of his choosing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they followed up with an album a couple of records later called The Dirty South. And it is all over it. And, you know, that's why I love the drive-by truckers so much, is in many ways, for all the, you know, they are not a regional band. These guys are worshipped the world over, and duly so, and it's almost like they're doing missionary work, because if that jackass eating his lobster roll by the South Harbor in Maine can ever come to grips with the Southern thing, the duality of the Southern thing, the dirty South, if he can ever come to grips with that Cossack, we might start fixing this country, because maybe he'd stop telling them how to live their lives and engage in a dialogue. And I know this sounds a little hypocritical coming from me, who said that I have no time to dialogue with these idiots. Well, but somehow or another, inside my strange little mind, I can't qualify or quantify the folks I grew up with as these idiots. Misguided, abused, used, as Howard Zinn noted, since 1600 and God knows what. You know, if you spend 14 or 15 generations inculcating something in someone, I personally believe it eventually finds its way into the DNA.
Yeah. Well, and the whole thing is, what a lot of people don't seem to understand is that there's a frightening allure to the whole idea of discrimination down here. Because no matter how dumb you are, no matter how screwed you are, no matter how low on the totem pole you are as a white person, you're still better than the best, most intelligent, most educated black person.
Right, and it has its corollaries, Cossack, because I remember a few years ago when one of those fiends from the religion industry declared that an atheist was unfit to hold office in the United States. You know, never mind that whole constitutional proscription about a religious test for holding office. Never mind. But he said he would rather have a drop-dead, stupid, evangelical in office than the most brilliant atheist on earth. And I knew then, you know, I guess this particular episode has had kind of a retrospective quality to it in places. But I knew then that was just, you know, that's just carryover. That's just stuff that the racism bucket wouldn't hold that carried over into the next bucket down.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of people tend to forget that, certainly, the blacks were the primary targets of discrimination down here, but it also carried over to the Jews, the Catholics, anybody.
And those are all the little buckets. Those are all the little buckets that are the overflow out of rural America's big old bigotry bucket that starts with black folk.
There you go.
Damn, Cossack, you got a good one going tonight, brother. Thank you.
Just trying to think of a few things.
You thought of some for sure, and I appreciate your patience. It's been a great way to end the program. Thanks, brother, and I hope you're feeling okay.
So.
Indeed. Take care, my friend.
All right, take care, Bob.
Bye now. The Cossack calling from North Florida, and the last word of the program for this evening. It's about 4 minutes before the hour. What a night. Man, this is two in a row. It's going to be hard to get to sleep. I feel like I've just had a gentle wave of 110 shot through me and ice-cold aquavit down my gullet. There might be a little ice-cold aquavit left. I think about that. I don't know if Ben has gotten that $15 yet, but could we please get that taken care of? As our buddy Kate on the Desert would say, get a woman on it. Or a man in this case. I have no pretensions either way. $15. let's make sure that the server bill gets paid so that this, you know, because I feel pretty good about the last couple of nights show. And who knows, tomorrow may be even better. We'll be having a conversation on the show tomorrow night between Maya Shenwar, myself of Truth Out, myself, and Mark Carlin of Buzzflash about the merger between Buzzflash and Truth Out, because they're still trying to find ways to get all of this to work and go and be funded. There's constant work on trying to sort out what the model is whereby so-called liberal media, which I tend to think of as more common sense media, honest media, sane media, hat-free media. Ron wrote in earlier when he heard Ed Henry from CNN talking about he had to take off his journalist hat and put on his board member hat. Ron said, "Bob, I believe all their hats have been sent out to be cleaned and blocked." Ain't that the truth? So let's try to mop the sweat off of Ben Birch's brow, if you please. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks to you who contribute either to White Rose or the Horn, or some of you do both, and thank you. This doesn't happen without you. It's that simple. Thanks. Thanks for your thoughts, your calls, your emails, your participation in the chat room. You are why this exists. I could go out and scream in the back half acre and get it out of my system, but it isn't, there's no meaning without you. Thank you to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thank you to Gene and Susan, our news ninjas. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks go out to, and I understand that there is an upcoming Cavalcade of Crazy column coming, our Cavalcade of Crazy columnist at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, Reverbo. Our Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne at Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Please continue to send your well wishes and good thoughts to Judy Bonds. She is fighting the fight of a life against cancer. And she is one of the reasons that I say that Coal River Mountain Watch, who is a partial sponsor of all of this, one of the reasons I say that Coal River Mountain Watch is comprised of the hardest working, bravest people I know. Judy Bonds set the standard for bravery, and she's doing it again. As I offered last night, if you'd like to send good thoughts along to Judy, send them to me at my email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and I will see that they reach her hands. I'd love to hand her a stack of 1,000. If you've got time, send a note. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org are another one of the reasons this continues to happen. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
It's good to be back in the normal swing of things again. We started with Moran Monday, and what a Moran Monday it was. We were up to our armpits in Morans. Merciful heaven. We truly were. And I think this evening's program will prove to be